is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo!
McCoy, touch to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon, Tuesday at One Bills Drive, OTA day number one. Organized team activity is underway on the other side of the building here, the At Pro Sports Training Center. Good afternoon, John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you from our One Buffalo studio. We each just came from a couple of minutes of watching the OTAs on the other side of the room. We're going to talk a lot about that today on the show. 90 players, full house.
It's a full house.
Activity all over the place.
Yeah.
It looked like closest thing we've seen to football since last January, really, right?
It is. Since football let out, and well, for this team in January, it is the closest thing you've seen to football. And, you know, it's good to get out there and kind of see some football. There's been so many, you know, administrative things going on around here, but now to get out there and see a little bit of football is good.
And as we said, it looks like a full house. It's organized team activity, OTA. It is voluntary attendance, but everybody you would want to see from to my naked eye was out there today. All the stars, all the, you know, not everybody participating because of various bumps and bruises, but some of the players are. Reggie Ragland was out there, and Reggie Ragland is a guy that a lot of people have their eyes on. Of course, the quarterback group was out there as well, but Reggie Ragland is a guy that a lot of people are keeping an eye on, Donald, and I'm not sure what his workload will be, and we'll probably get a better sense of that Thursday when the players are available to talk to, and head coach Sean McDermott addressed to the media. But it's good to see Ragland out there for the first time since first week of August last year.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's smart for the team to be smart with him, you know, and not rush him back. Now, like you said, I don't know what his workload is here throughout the OTAs, but I don't think that they should try to rush him back. I think that they should take their time with him and make sure that, you know, they gradually bring him along and so that he's ready when training camp gets here, you know. But he does need to be on the field doing some things, running around a little bit. But I don't know if he should be, like, leaning on guys and, you know, trying to catch Shady McCoy, who's making all types of cuts and things like that right now. So it's not really smart.
OTA number one, the first of 10 days of organized team activity spread out over the next month for the Buffalo Bills. And it is a little bit different than what they've done in the weeks leading up to this in terms of what they're allowed to do on the field. Pretty strict limitations on what they are allowed to do in OTAs, but they can go 11-on-11. We saw a little bit of that. They can do 7-on-7 drills, 9-on-7 drills. No live contact, no pads, obviously, and no live contact, as we said. And they'll do 3 OTAs this week with the media session coming up at the end of the week on Thursday. 3 more OTAs tomorrow, a week in between after that, after the Memorial Day holiday, and then 4 OTAs the final week, and then you're right into mandatory minicamp in the middle of June. So it's coming, folks. The season is coming. Training camp is coming, and a step forward today with organized team activity. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about where the Bills are at. We'd love to hear from you. We got a good guest lineup coming up. New general manager Brandon Bean scheduled to join us today at 1 o'clock. He's out there watching his team. First time he's got a chance to see the entire team work out as one, and Brandon Bean's going to join us at 1 to talk about some of the hires he has made in the personnel department since he got the job last Friday. Coming up at 1:30, Kevon Seymour, second-year cornerback, running with the ones. We expect that he will start these OTAs as a starter, and Kevon Seymour is going to join us at 1:30. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Dr. Samuel Brown, who's part of a group that has developed a new helmet that they're going to test in the NFL and at the high rungs of college football, a concussion-reducing helmet, they hope. We'll talk with Samuel Brown, Dr. Samuel Brown, about that coming up at 2 o'clock. Plus, we'll get a preview on an initiative the Bills and Sabres are involved in with units as far as a blood donation program coming up at 2:30. Plus, we'll try to do fake news, real news, as we do every day. And we'd like to hear from you. The phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The start of OTAs gives us a chance to kind of reset, look at the roster and, you know, what's the critical pieces of the roster. And that's the topic of our Twitter poll, which is up and has been up for about a half hour or so. Which position group do you view as the most important to the Bills' success in the 2017 season? Which position group is the most critical to the Bills having success this year? Love to hear your voice if you have a thought on that. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. You can weigh in on Twitter, even vote on Twitter. Which position group most important to the Bills' success in 2017? We're taking some responses already since it's been up in the last half hour. 42% of you, the majority, say defensive back or linebacker. Why we lump those two together, I think we just ran out of space. 40% say wide receivers. 12% say defensive line. 6% say the running backs. There's a lot of other places to go with this. I would go with linebacker myself. I've had a couple of people tweeting in already, what about quarterback? You forgot about quarterback. We didn't forget. Just know where to put it. But which position group do you think is the most critical to the Bills' success in 2017? I'd go linebacker, Donald, to be honest with you. I think there are still some questions about, Preston Brown and Reggie Ragland's health. Preston Brown, where does he fit in? Who's on the other side? Is it really going to be Ramon Humber lining up with the ones, or is there somebody else who can start on the weak side? And do they have the people in place yet that they're going to play, line up and play on September 10th at linebacker? I think linebacker, getting that question answered to me is the most critical. Defensive backfield, I think, is going to be okay. I think the addition of Tre'Davious White, obviously, and the two new safeties gives you some certainty as far as who's going to play. Mm-hmm. I don't know that any position on offense is as critical to what happens this season as it would be on defense, including quarterback or wide receiver or running back. I just think they're almost givens. Again, look, I mean, here's my position. If they produce on offense similar or, around the way they produced last year, I think the defense gets better, they're going to be all right.
Right.
So I wouldn't choose any position group on offense as critical to, this 2017 success. I would focus on defense, and I personally would focus on the linebacking group.
Yeah, I mean, we know on every football team that the quarterback position is the most important group. All right, so we know that. But we wanted to obviously get into other groups on the team and see what people thought about these other positions. And for me, I think I have to agree with you. The offense, if the offense can do what they did last year, and if they can improve in the passing game, you can keep all of those guys healthy on the field. I think the offense will be fine. But the defensive side of the ball was the issue last year. And it really was every level of the defense. Now, we know you had, your players that ended up in the Pro Bowls and things like that. But as a whole defense, as whole groups, they did not gel last year at all, for whatever reason. They weren't tackling. They weren't lining up correctly. They just weren't together last year. So, for me, I think I'd have to go with the defensive line. And that's because I know Coach McDermott, his philosophy is to be able to get pressure with his front four, in the 4-3 defense. He wants to be able to get pressure with his front four and not have to blitz all the time. Now, we know he likes his own blitz. He's going to do that, so the linebacker position is very important. But I think ultimately he wants to be able to get pressure with those guys up front on his defensive line. And if he can do that, everything else will fall into place.
I could be talked into defensive line, mm-hmm. and you almost did a good job of it there. Because I think if you boil it down to who are the critical players on the roster, I would look at Marcel Darius and look expecting him to have a good bounce back year. And I would look at Jerry Hughes also on that defensive line to be a critical player. So I could be talked into defensive line. I guess I settle on linebacker as the critical spot just because there's uncertainty with some of the, Zach Brown going and some of the other personnel moves and the shift to a 4-3. But I could be talked into that.
Yeah.
I sure could.
Even Shaq, you want Shaq now coming into his second year. He had some good playing time last year. Now it's time to really prove. You go back to the defense that you played in college and what he said on our show, he loves this defense.
Yeah.
He feels most comfortable in his defense. So if you can get Shaq playing like he did in college, and you can get Jerry back to – the level of play that we know Jerry can play. And then Marcel, if you can get him back to where we know he can play.
Play 16 games.
Right, and play 16 games. I mean, that defensive line is something to talk about, So I think this defensive line is very important. That defensive line can consistently get pressure on quarterbacks and also stop the run, which Marcel is a big part in stopping the run. If they can stop the run and get pressure on the QBs, I think the defense will be okay.
Things change so quickly in the league, Donald. It struck me when I'm listening to and thinking about what you're saying. It wasn't too long ago, like 2 years ago, when the defensive line was viewed as one of the best in the NFL.
Yeah.
With Kyle Williams and Marcel Darius and Jerry Hughes and Mario Williams at the time.
Yeah.
Here we are 2 years later with obviously a couple of coaches later and different defensive schemes, and you rightly point out how critical it is that they play well.
I think
things change so quickly, especially around here, it seems.
And you need one of the backups to step up as well, you know, because Kyle is up there in age. You know Kyle is going to bring it. But at the same time, you know, he's up there in age. So you don't know how much he can go. He might at this point in his career need somewhat of a rotation. You know, he might not. I don't know. But you need a Dolphus or one of these guys behind him to step up and be – and Jarrell Worthy, one of those guys, step up and be a critical force on that defensive line so that if Kyler Marcel is not in there – there's not a big drop-off.
And it's you make another good point. You're kind of talking me into defensive line, Donald.
I'm trying.
Did you set out to change my mind? I started on linebackers, but you're right about the backups. And just based on a couple of minutes of peeking in on the OTA session one today, yeah, Dolphus Washington has to be an important part of the rotation up there. Jarrell Worthy appears to be already an important part of the rotation up there. Max Vallis coming off the end, who you know nobody really knows much about, but I think a guy that could be. And Ryan Davis, unrestricted free agent they signed.
Yeah.
They need those depth players if they're going to get a healthy rotation, but they really do need Marcel Darius healthy, active, ready to play 16 games. They need Shaq Lawson to take the next step in his young career. They need Jerry Hughes to return where he was. Yeah, it's a critical spot. I'm still saying with linebacker, but you make good points about defensive line.
You know, we need our defensive line to play. You know, we need you guys to be able to stop the run. Now, linebackers are huge, but we need that defensive line. If we can get pressure with just the defensive line, then imagine what we can do at that point, because now you can come with different zone blitzes and drop somebody back out in the coverage and confuse quarterbacks, things like that. But they won't be confused if you're not getting that consistent pressure up front with just the defensive line.
Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The most critical, important position group for the Bills going into 2017 on this first day of organized team activity. The phone line's open, 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it via Twitter. You can vote in our Twitter poll, or you can tweet it in. Gills11 tweets in quarterback. My name tweets in, where is quarterback? Quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. Yeah, I get it. And a quarterback is important. I think they've had pretty decent quarterback play for a couple of years. I anticipate at least that level of play from the quarterback this year. And I wouldn't look at that as a major area of potential improvement for the Bills this year. I think, would you like to see Tyrod play better? Of course you would. But I think they can win with the way he's played the last couple of years. That would not be where I would go to first when I look at a position group for the Bills this year. Bob Timchek tweets in, real good question. I'm going to say DBs and linebackers because that's Coach McDermott's strength, and our defense was so poor last year, good and indie rebound. I agree with that. And it is, you know, what McDermott specializes in.
You know, it's amazing how people really get caught up in the quarterback play. Now, the quarterback, yeah, he needs to improve, and you need all of him to improve. You need to figure out who the backup is going to be or who the backup to the backup. I believe T.J. Yates is going to be the number two. Who's going to be behind him, the number three? Yeah, you need to figure that stuff out. But the defense was a problem last year. I'm sorry, the defense was a problem.
What are you sorry about, Donald? Don't be sorry.
The defense was a huge problem, and so they need to get that stuff straightened out on the defensive side of the ball. If you can shut teams down, this team will be okay. If you can shut teams down, especially here once it gets cold, you can run the ball, this team will be fine.
And another tweet, Drew Jacks tweets in, D-back and linebacker have the most to prove after a rough 2016. The D needs to improve totally, but none of it matters if they don't get good quarterback play. Well, yeah, and they haven't had bad quarterback play for the last few years, which is why I guess my starting point is the quarterback play will probably be similar, hopefully a little better, but similar to what they've received the last 2 years. And the most critical need for improvement comes, to my mind, linebacker, but maybe defensive line as well.
I mean, the team is scoring 26 points a game. I guess people want the team to score 40 points a game.
Sure, if you can do that.
Yeah, if you can do that. But how many offenses actually average 40 points a game?
Nobody.
There aren't many offenses
Nobody
that
does.
Do that. You
yeah.
know, I think the Falcons did it last year.
They didn't.
I don't think they had 40, but they were, you know, one of the high-flying offenses in the league last year. The Patriots. You know, they score a lot of points, but, I mean, come on. Most offenses are, you want to be around 25, 26 to 30 points a game. If you can get there, you're doing that consistently, then I think you're okay. You need your defense to be able to shut teams down. So if you're scoring, you know, 30 to 40 points a game, but your defense is giving up 40 points a game, and you're still losing games, then what are we talking about right now?
What are we talking about? You're right. Absolutely, you're right. Atlanta averaged 34 points per game last year. They were number one in the league, 33.8.
There you go.
Atlanta averaged 29. New England averaged 27. And Buffalo down there at 10th, averaging 24.9, 25 points per game, the same as Pittsburgh. Top 10 scoring offense.
Mm-hmm.
Can you get better? Absolutely.
Right.
But is that the critical need for the Bills moving forward? I don't think so. Well, let's hear from you. You might have a different thought on that.
I
don't think that scoring is the issue, scoring points. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. The most important position group, the most critical position group for the Bills to improve in 2017. Just getting started here at One Bills Drive. Brandon Bean's going to join us once the Bills wrap up on the field. We think that'll be about 1 o'clock. He is, of course, the new general manager of the Buffalo Bills, and he has made some moves. We talked about it yesterday, the signing yesterday of Joe Shane as assistant GM. We talked about that. That happened Sunday. Yesterday, Brandon Bean lured Texans director of player personnel Brian Gain away from the Houston Texans, and Brian Gain comes to the Bills as the vice president of player personnel. So he goes from director of player personnel at Houston to vice president of player personnel with the Buffalo Bills. He interviewed for the open GM job for the Bills last week, about a week and a half ago. They decided to hire Brandon Bean, but Brian Gain comes on, the new general manager. We're going to talk with Brandon Bean about this. He told Chris Brown it was a shot in the dark. He said it was a pretty lateral move, but Brian Gain was excited about building this and starting this. So Brandon Bean comes on Friday. On Sunday, they hire Joe Shane, who comes over from the Miami Dolphins. And on Monday, 3 days after he's hired, they hire the guy that was passed over for the job, Brian Gain. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's a pretty impressive start for Brandon Bean to bring in these young, up-and-coming guys as player personnel department. That was one of the big concerns we had even last week, Donald. How is Brandon Bean going to get, you know, hit the ground running and assembling a player personnel staff? Well, it is underway right now. It has gone on over the first few days that he's been in position here with the hiring of Joe Shane over the weekend on Sunday and Brian Gain from the Houston Texans, who interviewed for the GM job here. I know the Bills' brain trust believes that they essentially, by hiring Brian Gain, have a GM caliber candidate in there. Brian Gain had interviewed for other general managers' job and mentioned for other general managers' jobs around the National Football League. And so here he is, comes in here as vice president of player personnel. Seems like a pretty good hire.
You know, Peter King talked about this yesterday. I think I talked about this yesterday. There is something to be said about coming to a place that has not won in so long and building that thing from the ground up. If you eventually want to be a GM, and I'm talking about Joe Shane, Brian Gain, they eventually, I'm sure they want to be the actual GM, right? So if you come to a place and you actually build something and take this team to the playoffs, take this team to the Super Bowl, oh, yeah, everybody's knocking on your door for that opportunity. So that is, I think, what these guys look at. Regardless if it's a lateral move, they look at it as a great opportunity to come here and start something fresh with a new first-time head coach, a new first-time GM. They can all work together, build something crazy. The next thing you know, everybody has moved on and become GMs, and it comes from Coach Sean McDermott's tutelage.
Yeah, and I know from talking to the Bills decision makers over the weekend, actually, they're okay if these guys move on. You know, Brian Gain, who interviewed a year ago for the 49ers general manager spot and interviewed with the Eagles, Bears, and Jets for their GM openings. If he comes here and sticks around for a year or two and then moves on to be a general manager, the Bills feel like, okay, we'll take a year or two of Brian Gain's experience as vice president of player personnel here, because that means we're getting good people and good, smart young people who have upward mobility. I think that's kind of the feeling. They chose Brandon Bean to be the centerpiece here, but they'll happily take Brian Gain and Joe Shane, for that matter, as up-and-coming guys who may wind up being general managers elsewhere. So it's no Shane, no Gain, I guess.
No Shane, no Gain. I like that.
Shane and Gain and pray
Shane
for rain.
And Gain. Wow, yeah. We have to bring that up to Brandon Bean.
Yeah.
Somehow we got to get him involved in that whole thing.
Yeah, Brandon Bain. Take a couple of phone calls. Anything you'd like to talk about, the hiring of Brian Gain, vice president of player personnel, or what position group do you think is the most critical for the Bills in the 2017 season. The lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Ronnie gets us started from West Seneca. Hello, Ronnie.
Murph, how you doing, buddy? What's up?
Good, nothing.
It's real simple from all the positions. Discipline, no penalties. They have to stop getting the penalties. That's all we got to do. Thanks, bud.
Okay, I don't think that's all you have to do, though. I think you got to do a lot more than that. You know, Ronnie, we've said it. I've said it a lot. There is no, and it's proven, there is no correlation between a number of penalties and a losing record. There just isn't. In fact, some of the more heavily penalized teams have winning records. So you don't want penalties at the wrong time. You don't want to give up 15 yards on bad, undisciplined penalties, whether it's unsportsmanlike conduct or you know, any kind of you know, 15-yard penalty for illegal whatever, you know, taunting or whatever. They has been problems in the past, but I disagree, Ronnie. I don't think that alone, you know, solves the problem, gets you into the playoffs, adds four more wins to the resume. Sure, you want a more disciplined team without penalties, but I don't know, Donald. Do you agree? You don't want to see penalties. It does reflect poorly on the team as an undisciplined group. It can result in first downs that you don't want to give up, but the stats show, the numbers show, there's no correlation between penalties and winning, right, either way. So,
I mean, I think, yeah, you want to cut down on penalties. All teams want to cut down on penalties. Now, it's going to happen. For me, it's not penalties. You know, things like offsides, things like that will happen. Holding, you know, that's going to happen. Pass interference, you want to cut down on it, but it's going to happen. It's football. You know, you have like taunting penalties you know, things like late hits out of bounds. You don't want that stuff. I mean, and so, yeah, you need to correct that stuff, and guys need to be disciplined. But ultimately, man, I think for this team to win, this team needs to tackle on defense. They need to be in the right spot, line up. Everybody needs to give their all, play up to their potential, and this team will be okay. Offensive side of the ball, I think they need to score points. They need to run the ball. They do need to improve in the passing game, but I think ultimately – if they can stay around 25 points, 26 points a game, then, yeah, I think they'll be fine.
Rich in Buffalo has a thought on which is the most critical position group on the roster. Rich, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Murph and Don?
Great.
Good.
My big thing this year is going to be the defensive line. In today's NFL, I know we're worried about defensive backs. In today's NFL, the receivers are so good, doesn't matter who your backs are. The line has got to get pressure on the quarterback. They haven't made quick decisions and wrong decisions. We need a big, big year on a Marcel and Adelphius Washington rotating in there. It's got to do a great job in the middle. What do you think, Murph?
I think you're right, Rich. I think, you know, if you ask me to name the critical player on the roster, the biggest question mark, the one guy who can, you know, control what happens in 2017, I would land squarely on Marcel Darius. You need him for as many of those 16 games as he can play, and you need him at a high level of play, which neither one of those things happened last year. I think he is the critical piece, and defensive line is a critical position group for the Bills. Washington, I think, Adolphus Washington going into his second year, I think he's going to get more snaps. I really do, but I don't know if I would put him in the same category as Darius in terms of really need good play out of this guy. Donald?
Yeah, I don't even put Adolphus yet into the same category as Kyle. You know, I want Kyle to play like he's always played, and hopefully he's now getting up in age that hopefully he can do that. He can still play at that level, stay, you know, try to remain from getting injuries. I remember last year he had that back issue that crept up on him. So hopefully he doesn't deal with that stuff. But Marcel is a guy who is so gifted at that defensive tackle position. He can actually wreak havoc in the backfield for quarterbacks. He can get sacks on the quarterback. And he's also the most important position or player on this team, I think, in stopping the run. He is that big man in the middle that stops the run for this team. You know, now everybody else falls in line. The linebackers, they all can play off of him and Kyle, but I think Marcel needs to be able to play, or we need him to play at his potential. Play at your potential, Marcel. Play 16 games, and I think we'll be okay.
You mentioned Kyle Williams, and I just want to say this, and we just had a chance to peek at today's OTA session, but as you know, our office adjoins the field house, the training center, and right outside our office at the start of the workouts today was the defensive line.
Yep.
And I'm watching Mike Waffle work with that group, and it's a big group now, 90 players on the roster. But in particular, I couldn't help but notice, I mean, all around the field there was high energy, kind of, you know, a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. Kyle Williams going into, what did we say, his 13th year, still runs around out there like he's a rookie trying to make the roster. Yeah. I noticed that. They were doing just simple D-line drills, you know, waffle with the ball on the pole and, mm-hmm. you know, pulls it and you jump, you know, yep. basically probably looking at get-off times on the ball.
Exactly.
And Kyle runs around out there like he's, you know, he's an undrafted rookie trying to make his mark. And, you know, yeah. and he's a 13-year veteran, 33 years old, right?
33 years old. Here's the thing. Like, there are guys that – and Kyle's not doing it for money. At all. You know, he's doing it because he wants, first of all, he loves to play the game, and that's why he runs around out there like he's still young, and he wants to win. He at least just wants to get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure he wants to win a Super Bowl. We all want to win a Super Bowl. If you play this game or if you are a part of any organization, you want to win the Super Bowl. But he at least wants to be able to just sniff the Super Bowl. Like, mm-hmm. just let me get to the playoffs and see what that's like. He loves to play this game, and I think he wants to be a part of turning this thing around because he's been here so long for so many, you know, seasons and not making it into the playoffs. He wants to be a part of that, and so that's why it looks like he's out there having fun.
Most critical position group for the Bills in the 2017 season. Call here from Adrian in Rochester. Yo, Adrian, you're on the air.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good.
What's up?
I love the show. Listen every day while I'm working out of my car. And I had a thought. What about wide receiver? You know, with all the speculation on Tyrod not being an elite talent, mm-hmm. what if his wide receiver crew could give him a little extra help on a, you know, game-to-game basis, you know, helping him out when he's coming out of the pocket? I think that could be a real big improvement. Donald, especially, I'd like to hear what you think about that.
Well, I think on the offensive side of the ball, the wide receiver group is the most important. And people would say the quarterback is the most important. I say wide receiver because, number one, we don't know who is playing what right now aside from Sammy. Okay. We know Sammy is the number one. We don't know who's going to be 2, 3, 4, and 5. Number one, that's one reason. Number two, we had so many injuries at the wide receiver position last year. I think that group is going to be watched the most because we want these guys to be in the lineup on Sundays, like 15, 16 games. We need you guys in the lineup every week so that Tyrod is comfortable. If we can get those guys in the lineup every week and Tyrod is comfortable, then we can get an accurate assessment of Tyrod Taylor. Is Tyrod Taylor the guy? Now, he has his weapons that he's been with since mini camps.
Like, sometimes a lot of the onus got put on Tyrod and – you know, and there's guys coming off the, you know, coming off the street playing, playing NFL Sundays. So.
Yeah, you're right. That was tough on him. I agree with you. Thanks, Adrian. And I agree with you, Donald, how that on offense is the most critical spot. Again, we're getting initial impressions after a rookie minicamp over the weekend and first day of mm-hmm. OTAs. I know even going into the last few days, you thought a lot about Zay. You think even more about him right now.
Yeah. Just getting to watch him. He's so smooth in and out of breaks. You know, he's like a natural receiver. It's just like, you know, watching him is similar to watching Robert Woods. Now, Robert Woods was more – he was seasoned mm-hmm. after a couple of years in the league. But when you watch Zay Jones, you can just see that natural ability. You can see him smooth in and out of breaks, whereas other guys, it might – seem to struggle in and out of breaks. You know, it just seems like he knows what he's doing. He's been trained well, and we know his dad played. His brothers are football players as well. His brother plays for the Vikings. His brother's a receiver, right, for the Vikings, I believe. And so, you know he's been trained well, and you can see it when he's out there running around. I'm excited to, it's fun right now to watch these guys run around in shorts and a helmet. But let's just see how it goes once you get to training camp, once they put the pads on, and now we're hitting.
Yeah, we're not putting anybody in Canton, Ohio.
Oh, week. Yeah. No, definitely not.
That's an old Parcells saying. Don't go ahead and put them in Canton just yet. You know, we've seen a couple of practices.
Yeah.
Hey, there were roster moves late yesterday after we got off the air. You may have caught up with them. The Bills releasing linebacker Junior Silvestri and undrafted safety Jeremy Tyler and signing a couple of players from the weekend rookie minicamp tryout players. A couple of linebackers, Anthony Harrell, who is 6'2", 229 pounds, graduated from Georgia Tech, went to Florida for his last year of college eligibility. His dad, James Harrell, played 8 seasons in the NFL at linebacker. They also signed Abner Logan, who played last year at University of Albany, right down the road after transferring from Maryland. A couple of linebackers signed to the team coming off that weekend rookie minicamp. Pretty impressive. Come in here.
Yeah.
It's just, hey, come on in and try out. and they're done on Sunday, and you get the tap on the shoulder, and here, sign a contract, we're keeping you. Can you imagine how cool that must feel?
The thing is, if you were a linebacker that either got drafted here late or you signed as an undrafted free agent, or if you just get a chance to try out, I mean, it's kind of open at linebacker, you know? And so you look at that like, man, yeah, I'm going in there as a tryout player, but when I look at the roster, I have a great opportunity to make this team, you know? So I'm going to go in here, and you would always say, I'm going to go in here and give it my all. But you look at this situation and say, wow, like, I really have a chance to make this team.
Which is why I go back to linebacker as my critical spot.
Yeah.
Not that neither of these guys are going to start or even make the roster. Who knows? There's a long way until that. But clearly, you know, by signing two tryout guys at the linebacker spot,
they're looking for something. They are.
I think. I don't think they have it yet.
I don't think they have it yet, you know, and they want to bring as many people in as they can to let these guys compete and see who's the best. You know, who's the best out of this group? Who can step up and be the starting linebacker? Now, you know, Coach McDermott has already said that Ramon Humber would be the guy, but that doesn't – they're talking about, you know, they've laid it out there that it's a quarterback thing, you know.
Right.
It's an open competition. So linebacker, yeah, it's going to be an open competition there too.
Yeah. All right. Critical spots on the roster. What do you think? Critical position group. You can weigh in our Twitter poll or you can give us a call. We're going to take a break and come back with more of that and more NFL discussion as well. The numbers, 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to hear from the new GM. Brandon Bean's going to join us in studio when the Bills wrap up at practice. Also, Kevon Seymour coming up at 1. But your chance now at 803-0550 and toll free, 1-888-552-550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Talking about the roster, the Bills roster, as they practice in the other room. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. We're here until 3 o'clock. Brandon Bean, Bills GM, going to join us a little bit after 1 once practice ends. They're on the other side of the wall over there in the AdPro Sports Training Center with a brand-new speaker setup with music.
Brand new audio system.
And you can feel, if you watch real closely, you'll see our laptops beginning to shake if you're watching on TV. Because the bass is bumping in the other room.
At base, when you, I actually walked past the speaker once, and I was like, "Wow! Like I just need to stay on the other side of the field. This thing is loud, man. It's nice though. You know, they
did
need
you practice
that.
With music when you were playing. Did Chan do that?
Mm-hmm.
What's the?
I think all coaches do that. You know, they all do now.
I know
they want you to focus. You know, so they try to make it like the elements of a game, and you know, crowd noise and all different types of noise, and see. Can you focus on this? Can you remember your plays, especially the rookies? You know, these guys are in here now. They're now on the field. This is not rookie minicamp. You're on the field with the stars of the team, you know. So can you focus on what you need to get done? We're throwing plays at you. You're still probably starstruck because you had a chance to meet Shady McCoy and things like that. But now we're going to throw some music at you, and can you still get it done? I think that's the reason why they do it. During the season, they do it because – you know, you might be on the road as an offensive team, so they'll play it during the offensive segments so that you can't hear anything. You know, so it's different points of the year. They do it for different reasons.
That's going on. Practice is going on for another half hour or so over in the other room. Our discussion goes on until 3. And our Twitter poll today deals with the Bills. The roster is presently constructed. Which position group do you view as most critical to their success in 2017? The Twitter poll's been up for an hour or so. Right now, 42% of you vote defensive backs, linebackers. 38% say wide receivers. 13% say defensive line. 6% say running backs. A couple of people have tweeted in, what about the quarterbacks? And I just don't know that, you know, I'm talking about what would have the largest, again, repeating, if you get the same kind of quarterback play you had the last 2 years, you'll probably get the same result. I think you got to get better somewhere else. There's a tweet here that I wanted to read on this that I had trouble deciphering, really. Where is it? Quarterback, Andrew Green, quarterback is the only reasonable choice. Defensive backs, linebacker is the most important of the options. Not quite sure what that means.
Quarterback is the only reasonable choice.
But defensive linebacker, most important of the options. Okay, that's we didn't put that up as an option. I get that. I don't think quarterback is the reasonable choice.
That's like saying, you know, he controls the 53, but he has the final
say. Don't go there. Michael Harvard tweets in, secondary and linebacker should each have their own category. and because arguable they are were number one and number two in priority position to improve. Go Bills.
You used to talk to Twitter about that. They need to give us
exactly. These are the limitations of Twitter, which is why we prefer the telephones, which is why we're taking a call right here from Mike. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Great. Good, Mike.
I think the most important position is the wide receiver. I don't think it's ever been a personnel problem, more of a scheme problem, where they need to get these guys out there, run the ball less, get them involved. As an extension of a running game with short passing like New England does. New England's not throwing the ball 40 yards downfield. Brady's just picking guys 5 yards here or there and letting them make plays. It'd be nice to actually use the guys we have, and then, McCoy, catch more passes. It stinks Carlos Williams ruined his career. He was great at that. But, I'd just like him to see, be a little more diverse on offense and not try and, run the ball, control the clock. Let's put the pressure on people.
But Mike, shouldn't you sort of try to play to your strengths? If you got LeSean McCoy and a pretty good offensive line when it comes to run blocking, shouldn't you? Why force it? Look, do they need to be more balanced on offense? Yeah, they need to throw it better, more effectively. But when you compare them to New England, you're talking about a Hall of Fame quarterback who doesn't live here. I think you're trying to force them to do something that they might not be good at.
Yeah, but the thing is, John, we've led the league in rushing how many years in a row?
Two.
And what do we have to show for it? It's a great stat. It's great that it's a strength, but it's not winning. It's not necessarily winning ball games. Where Tyrod Taylor can throw 5 yard passes, just like anybody else can. He's not a Hall of Fame quarterback, but if he's making $15 million, he's a starting quarterback. He should be able to, he should be able to do those types of things. That's my opinion on the matter. I think we have the personnel to do it. It's just the scheme has always been to play to score and grind it out and try and win games 16-13, and it's just not working.
I just think that's just because the defense hasn't done what they need to do. You look at the AFC North, right? The AFC North, they all play that way. They all play, they run the ball well. Now, the Steelers, as of late in the last couple of years, have been like kind of a high-flying offense because of Antonio Brown and those guys, but they still run the ball well with Le'Veon Bell and the rest of the guys behind him, and their defense will shut teams down. So you look at those games for years, the Baltimore-Pittsburgh games end up like, 10-7. Games like that, and it's like it's going to be a defensive battle. That's just kind of how they play football. I think the Bills, they are going to play to their strengths, but you need a better defense to be able to slow these teams down. I don't think that you should play away from your strength and just try to force yourself into passing the ball because everybody says this is a passing league. Yeah, you need to be more balanced. You need to be able to pick up. There were times last year where you needed Tyrod Taylor to make a throw to pick up a first down, and he didn't make the throw. So he needs to improve in that. We need to improve in that as an offense. But I still think you are going to run the ball. Being number one in rushing the last 2 years has gotten his team to top 10 in scoring. So if you're a top 10 scoring team, but you are still not winning games, that's an issue.
I agree. It's defense. Here is Greg in Rochester. Hello, Greg. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, I got a take, but I'm going to respond to the last guy. We were seventh in the in the league in scoring last year. If you don't have that Tom Brady, that's the way to do it, is run the ball with that kind of offense where you're still scoring points and your defense needs to do their job. So I disagree with that completely. If their defense was what it was 3 years ago, we'd be in the playoffs the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one, talking about quarterbacks, is the biggest, only reasonable thing. They've drafted one each of the last 2 years. They picked up a free agent veteran guy, and they've reworked Tyrod's contract to make it a flexible position going forward. I don't know what they want to do. There's not a lot of good quarterbacks out there, so I think they're working. They're doing what they can do with what's out there. So I agree with those moves. As far as what's up with the roster, I think it would definitely be linebackers and safety. Those are the positions they kind of neglected in the draft. They had five positions. They filled three of them with top picks, in my opinion, and I think that's a strong move because linebackers and safeties are probably – you'll have a better chance of finding a free agent linebacker and safety that gets on the field with what's left. And I think they should go after Jarius Byrd. He's still out there. And, Williams. I think we should go after him. He, you know, we couldn't keep him because his salary was so high, and you can't trust that he's out there, but he still wants to play. And, you know, he's probably very reasonably priced right now. They should bring him back in. He's a good safety and better than what's on the roster.
Aaron Williams, did you say?
Aaron Williams, yeah, why not? Why not?
Well, the neck is why not. I think they're worried about does he hold up with his neck. Nobody else has signed him, right?
Obviously
people have concerns about him.
Oh, if his contract was not expensive, he would be a Bill, and they would let him make the decision. He's a grown man. If somebody else is going to get him cheap, let him come here cheap. I love Aaron Williams. If he feels he's going to be okay, then, you know, that decision he's making as far as if he's going to play, he's a good player. So
do you believe that, Donald? Thanks, Greg. It's an interesting point. Do you believe that, Donald, that if Aaron Williams' contract was more manageable that they would have brought him back? I don't know. What do you think?
I think the doctors and the training staff are the reason. Look, I've had a chance to speak to Aaron in the last couple of days, you know, and he said, listen, I've been cleared to play, and I train every day and everything. Now teams are just worried about the neck. Aaron has made some money in his career. Is he going to come in and play for pennies? No. He might come in and even for the veteran minimum for him right now, he might make $1 million a year, let's just say. He'll make $1 million a year. He might sign a one-year contract for $1 million. He would come in and play for that just because he wants to show that he can still play football, right? But teams are really scared about that neck, you know. They do not want something to happen to him on their watch because they just was like, oh, well, his contract is cheaper, so we can go ahead and sign him and let him make the decision. Sometimes you got to protect the players from themselves.
Yes.
As the organization. And that's what they did with me because I wanted to still play football. And they were like, no, you can't go out there. You're going to – like, you might die on the field, you know. And they don't want that on their watch. They just don't want that.
Yeah, who does? Nobody would want that. We're going to break. We're going to be back with more discussion about which is the most critical position group for the Bills going into the 2017 season. Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Back with more in a moment from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back. John Murphy, Donald Jones from One Bills Drive. On the other side of the Ann Pro Sports Training Center, the Bills have wrapped up day one of their organized team activity. We're going to be talking with Bills GM Brandon Bean in a moment about the couple of hires he has had. But in the meantime, let's talk with you, and let's talk to Dan in Florida. Dan, welcome. You're on the air with us. Hi.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can.
Okay, great. I'm trying to take you off Bluetooth, so I apologize.
Okay.
I couldn't agree more with you guys in terms of defense. It just, we're meant more for a 4-3 than a 3-4. And, you know, that was our Achilles. I mean, we like you said, Donald, we were 7th in scoring last year. And I don't care that Tyrod was 31st in the pass. Whatever. It doesn't matter. We scored. I mean, the points matter. So, you know, I think we've got the – and what do? We hired a great defensive mind with McDermott, you know, as opposed to frickin' Rex. And I think he's going to have
his name now?
Faster. You know what I mean? That he's going to have him play faster, and it's going to be more reactive versus – and now we've got Zay Jones to compliment Sammy. And I think this guy's going to be a step up, Donald, from Robert Woods. Not that I don't like Woods, but I think he's going to be a step up, and he's cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely – going to be cheaper by a long shot right now. But I hope he is a step up from Robert Woods.
Yeah, Dan makes an interesting point, though. It got me thinking. And I put myself in the Robert Woods camp. I think he's a really good, underrated player.
Yeah.
But the ceiling for Zay Jones, I think, is higher than it maybe ever was for Robert Woods. Would you agree?
I don't know if
it's body type or something in the skill set. I don't know. I mean, we've seen Zay Jones a couple of times.
Yeah.
But that's something to watch anyway. I'm not prepared to say that yet, but it seems to me the ceiling for Zay Jones is probably higher than what it was ever was for Robert Woods.
When you watched Zay Jones in the Senior Bowl practices and then in the game, I mean, he literally took over the game, you know, and he was like showing out in practice every day, you know. And then when you get a chance to see him out here on the field in practice, you can just see that natural ability. Now, still yet to be seen with pads on and things like that. And still yet to be seen how fast he is. If he has some like real legit speed to him in the game, you know, he could eventually one day turn into a number one receiver, you know. But I don't know if you would have ever said that about Robert Woods.
Can I say this, too, about Zay Jones? And I mentioned this to you. You mm-hmm. know, I was out here over the weekend looking at the rookie minicamp. He seems slight. You know yeah. what I mean? I'm not saying he's small, and I know he's got some length, but he seems slight. And I guess I immediately think about durability. And let's face it, Robert Woods had his own durability issues as well. But that would be something to keep an eye on with Zay Jones for me. Just can he handle the pounding? Will he get bigger in the next couple of years? I hope so.
I mean, you do hope that he gets bigger. You don't want him to lose speed and things like that. And when if he's trying to get bigger, because that can happen. I think, you know, there are some receivers. You look at a guy like A.J. Green, you know, who is like skinny. He's like a stick, you know. And he's – last year he got hurt, but he's been pretty durable throughout his career. So as long as Zay knows how to play the game – and this is the thing with wide receivers. You have to know when to catch the ball and turn up and keep it moving, or when to catch the ball and get down and not take that pounding. You know, and that's how you prolong – that's how you make – give yourself a longer career. And that's the problem with some quarterbacks, you know. Quarterbacks that are running like RG3 – Cam Newton, these guys are running around taking hits. You don't need you to do that. We need you to slide. We need you on the field, you know. So it's the same thing with wide receivers. Know when to go down, know when to split the defense and take it all the way to the house.
Squeezing one more call here. Clarence calling from Buffalo. Hello, Clarence. You're on the air with us.
Oh, good afternoon. How are you gentlemen today?
We're great.
Good.
Good. Two things that I wanted to emphasize on is that the defensive line, and one thing that you don't have on there is the offensive line.
Right.
And I want to speak basically on third down situations.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the defensive line has to be a little more aggressive, especially on third down, so we can get off the field on third down, put some pressure on the quarterback, give the defensive back the chance to do their job, okay? Secondly, the offensive line, on third down especially, we seem to have a problem when it's third and two, third and one, and we can't get the first down on big especially in big situations. So these are the two things that I'm more concerned about than maybe a quarterback situation or a wide receiver situation, because if you can't win in the trenches, you can't win.
Okay.
When you talk about the offensive line, short yardage game, I think last year they were okay in terms when they were trying to run the ball and pick up the first down.
Yeah.
There were some third downs when they tried to pass it and Tyrod missed the receiver.
There was some like tight red zone stuff which didn't go well, especially early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think it never got great. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like short yardage red zone stuff that never got great.
I think you know, that's. I mean, there's two sides to that. You have the offensive line, which we know our offensive line is a good run offensive line. So if they can play how they did last year in the run game, they will be okay. You have two guys in Tolbert and DeMarco that I think will be using that short yardage stuff. And hopefully those guys come to play and they bring it every single time they get that short yardage situation. But what they also give you is, and we know this is a play action offense, they give you that opportunity to play action, throw it to them out of the backfield. Even though it's third and one, dump it to a fullback right there in play action. He can pick up a first down, and he can, you know, pick up 10, 15 more yards for you, you know, and both of those guys can make that happen for you. So I think it just makes this offense more versatile to have both of those guys on this roster.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be sitting in with the new general manager of the Buffalo Bills, Brandon Bean, standing by to join us to get his thoughts on the hires that he's made already. Brandon Bean, Bills' new GM, standing by. He's going to join us next on the show, The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network, sports update.
Got the update from One Bills Drive, where day one of organized team activity has just wrapped up. The Bills on the field for about 90 or more minutes, 11 on 11, 7 on 7, 9 on 7 work. For the first time, obviously no live contact. The first of 10 OTAs over the next 4 weeks. The Bills announced that they hired a vice president of player personnel. Brian Gain comes over from the Houston Texans, where he was director of player personnel. Gain was interviewed for the Bills general manager job just about a week and a half ago, and now he is with the Bills as vice president of player personnel. Bills made a couple of additions to the roster yesterday. from the rookie minicamp, tryouts for a couple of rookies, and two of them invited to join the roster, linebackers Anthony Harrell and Abner Logan, to make room the Bills release linebacker Junior Silvestri and undrafted safety Jeremy Tyler. Seahawks coach Pete Carroll says the team is considering Colin Kaepernick and Robert Griffin III as possible backup options to starting quarterback Russell Wilson. Stanley Cup hockey. Tonight it is Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals, Anaheim and Nashville. The series moves to Nashville for Game 3. It is tied at one win apiece. And in the Eastern Conference last night, the Penguins beat the Senators 1-0. They'll wait until tomorrow night to play their Game 3, that game in Ottawa. And the Bisons play Game 2 of their series with Syracuse tonight, 6:05 first pitch at Coca-Cola Field. Hall of Famer Tim Raines will toss out the ceremonial first pitch tonight, elected into the Baseball Hall of Fame in January to be formally inducted this summer. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. It is the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, and joining us just off the field on the other side of the building is the new general manager of the Buffalo Bills, Brandon Bean. Brandon, thanks for coming by again. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Is there any sense at all that things have calmed down a little bit for you, or not quite yet?
Not quite yet. big staff to fill here, as I mentioned the other day when I was on here. So been on the phone a lot all weekend and into yesterday, and starting to get some guys in. As you saw, we've hired Joe and Joe Shane and Brian Gain, you mentioned a minute ago. And I'm very excited for the Buffalo Bills to get those two guys.
I was cracking up Donald. I said, it's no Shane, no Gain, or Shane and Gain and play for Rain. Or what?
Gain and Shane. I thought they were like a law firm.
It does sound like a law firm. Now, is that some of the guys that you had on your mind when you first took this job? Like, I would like to get these guys. I want to target these guys.
Those were two of my top targets, to be quite honest with you. I hired Joe originally in Carolina, and he left us. He grew to where we couldn't grow him anymore and was promoted to a higher role as a national scout in Miami in 2008 and worked his way up to director of player personnel about 3 years ago. And that's a credit to Joe, moved to Miami and has done a great job. And he was ready for this opportunity to be assistant GM.
What do you view his role here as? What do you want? What do you need your assistant GM to do? And how does Joe fit into what you're looking for?
Joe's going to be in my hip pocket. He's going to help me oversee the personnel. He's going to help me, you know, with contracts and things like that. We're going to talk about valuing players. You know, that's very important. Where does a player fit? Where does he slot in the pay scale, you know, across the league, putting value on him? Helping me oversee the football operations. He'll be involved in Monday medical meetings, you know, after the game. And just that's the part that he's got to grow. He hasn't had experience with that. He's mainly just been in personnel. And my job is to grow him so that he can one day be prepared to step in the seat I'm in.
Can you talk to us a little bit about valuing players? Now, we know there are certain organizations that feel like this is what we pay for this position, and we don't really get outside that box. Some organizations might do it a little bit differently. What's your thoughts on that? And just talk to us a little bit about like how you value players, and will you ever get outside that box?
Yeah, you don't want to just box yourself in to the quick answer here. Obviously, quarterbacks are valued more than anybody. You know, left tackles have to protect them. Pass rushers, you see those things in the league. I tell you, part of it is not only what you value, but what you have to pay to get some of these guys. I mean, the guard market this year really exploded. And when I was down in Carolina, Trey Turner is a hot young guard. And his value, we've just, you know, when I was down there, we just saw it going up and up. And you have to pay attention to not only what you value, guys, but what the league's doing.
Is that strict supply and demand, or is there a trend developing in the game that maybe would account for those sort of fluctuations, you think?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I think at the end of the day, you need to know your players. You draft best available, and if they, you got to decide, are they worth this much of the percent of the cap, and where do you want to lot it? I don't think you can say I want to pay one high left tackle. I want to pay, you know, one guard. I want to pay one D tackle. Theoretically, those all sound great, but if you do that, sometimes you might pay a guy that's really not worthy because he is your best tackle, even though he's really not worth the market you know, that he wants.
Brandon, I used to have years ago this conversation with Bill Polian, who, you know, believed in that kind of theory, but he also said you got to make room for outliers, guys who are, you know, maybe you don't want to play safety that much, but if he's Troy Polamalu, then maybe you do have to pay them that much, right?
And that's perfect because that's what you want to do. It's about football players. You want to draft, develop, sign, whatever you want to do. Build your roster with as many good players, and we'll find spots for them to get them on the field.
Joe Shane hired over the weekend as the Bills' assistant GM. Do you view him as like supervising the college scouting staff once that's assembled, or is there another piece in place, do you think, below him that would supervise college scouting?
Well, he'll oversee, you know, Brian Gain. You know, he and I will both oversee Brian Gain as we brought him in. And Brian's number one job will be to oversee both staffs,
okay,
the pro and the college. But Joe's going to be heavily involved. I'm going to be heavily involved. It's going to be, just like I said the other day with Sean, it's going to be a group effort. We're all doing this together. We all have ideas. It's great. Those guys have bounced around more teams than even I have. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking about all the different things that we liked and didn't like from, and we're still putting our grading scale together for pro and college. Once we get this staff done, that's going to be the next project for us.
Where did you learn to put together a grading scale, and whose do you borrow or copy?
Well, obviously in Carolina, we did keep the same college scale through my whole career there. We switched pro scales a couple of times, most recently when Gettleman came in 2013. So there's things, you know, we'll probably rely more on the college scale that I'm used to. The pro, we're going to talk about. And I think Brian and I and Joe talked about some things that they've done. And Brian's got some real good ideas. Brian cut his teeth in this league as a pro guy. Joe cut his teeth as a college guy. And that's part of the marriage that I like between the three of us.
In terms of the scale and the scale that you have used in the past and what you're going to use here, have you ever studied, let's just say, a Bill Polian and the way he used to do things or any other great GMs of the past?
Yeah, most definitely. You're always talking to other guys around the league to see what they do. I mean, I've talked to people that know what, you know, the Patriots do, because there's guys that have grown out of that, you know, not directly from the Patriots, but mm-hmm. you always want to look and see who's winning, who's doing things right, and figure it out and take little pieces and nuggets. And even in Carolina, it's not the same Carolina system that it was in 2000. You know, you're always tweaking, trying to make it better, and that's what we'll be here. We're not set in stone concrete. It's got to be X or got to be Y. We want to make it the best thing for the Buffalo Bills.
Do teams protect that? Is that like proprietary information for
you know,
the most part?
There's just so many different ways you can put values on guys. It's really just you want to do it to where it's easy, it makes sense for the scouts. You don't want to make it hard, and you want to make it easy for them to articulate to you what they see. Their job is to draw a picture. In case I never went to Boise, Idaho and saw X player, mm-hmm. they want to draw that picture for me, so before I turn the tape on, I kind of already know what I'm going to watch.
I want to ask you, just, and this is nuts and bolts of scouting, but I've always kind of been fascinated by this. In the old days, the scouts would be in the road, and they'd phone in a report, and there'd be people transcribing that report, you know, upstairs in personnel. It doesn't still happen like that.
No, right? Technology is just
so, what do they do?
So advanced. We use like Surfaces or iPads, you know, different teams. Here we're using Surface, but there's so many different ways you can type them, and you can send your reports through VPN into our database.
And they go in while they're on the road, the scouts?
If they want to send them in. They don't have to. Okay. They can. It's when they're filled, their report is completed. Sometimes you can start a report in August doing background check, but you might circle back after you've watched some more games and not submit the report till October, if that makes sense.
Yeah. We're with Brandon Bean, the Bills' general manager. Tell us about Brian Gain. How much contact you've had with him over the years. He comes on now to be vice president of player personnel, but how well do you know him, and have you worked with him much in the past or at all?
Yeah, you know, we've never worked on the same team,
right,
but seen Brian on the road, whether he was advancing a game, see him in the press box and talk ball when he was doing pro stuff, also seen him doing college stuff. It's funny, the last few years, Houston and Carolina, we stayed in the same hotel at the Combine. And I had breakfast with Brian one of the last days this year. And first of all, Brian's a good man, a good family man. He's a hard worker. He's very humble. A lot of the things you've heard me say that I'm looking for in players, I'm looking for in staff. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to outwork him. He's got great experience on the pro and the college, more on the pro, but he's done college stuff, and we're going to help him even expand that and get even more college experience.
We always talk about, like, out at the Combine or out at the Super Bowl. I mean, everybody will go, and you'll have breakfast with a guy or something like that. Somebody that you've never met, you might have heard his name. You sit down, you talk to him over breakfast. Like, how fast do you guys really get into football and sharing philosophies on different players and what you like?
you know, we talk on the surface. It doesn't go deep. But sometimes you have a deeper relationship with a certain person as you develop a friendship, especially if you worked with them somewhere. You know, again, I have never gone in depth. I've never read Brian's reports per se, but we've talked ball. I also talk to other people around the league that have worked with Brian that I trust. And, I mean, unanimous. I got so many texts yesterday from people, great hire, heck of a hire, you know, just a lot of different, you know, feedback. And I think, you know, the Buffalo Bills will see that in time.
Like you, Brian Gain has interviewed for the big job, the general manager job before. So they have that kind of shared experience, I guess. And it seems like he's on the cusp of maybe getting one of these GM jobs sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Brian's had more interviews than me, and which represents the success he's had in the organizations he's been on and the respect he has around the league. A lot of people thought that was odd that I hired Brian. He interviewed for this job. But Brian's a trustworthy, loyal guy, and I just look at it as another great addition. The more people that I can surround myself, I'm looking to surround myself with people smarter than me, better than me, and let's make the collaborative, you know, fist together.
And when you hire a guy, and let's just say 3, 4, 5 years from now, he goes on to be a GM himself, that has to be something that you're proud of, right?
Most definitely. We want to. That was part of the attraction of these two guys. I told them, I want you two guys to come in here and help me grow this thing, develop younger guys, and, you know, let's teach everybody and watch them grow. If, you know, one day I truly believe Brian and Joe will both be GMs in this league and get their opportunity to show what they can do.
You mentioned this Friday at your introductory news conference, but what a great opportunity it is for you at a fairly young age to put your stamp on a team. I mean, it's the door's wide open for you here to hire the people you want, to set up the nuts and bolts of the scouting department the way you want. That's pretty cool that you get a chance to do that.
It's very exciting. It's a lot of work, but when it's all said and done, I couldn't have set it up any better, because you're right. I could put the stamp of the type of, just like a player, the type of scout I want, pro and college, and the system that I want. And, again, I say it's going to be we. We're going to do it all together. I truly believe in that. We're going to get buy-in. And I think when it's all said and done and you guys see all the hires we have and we got a lot of things in place, guys coming in this week and maybe even into next week, I think you'll be pretty impressed with what we put together.
So you have more hires to make, and the Blesto meetings are a couple of weeks away?
Blesto meetings are next week. Yep. Joe and Brian will definitely be down there, depending on where I'm at in the process of hiring. I may still be up here and have to miss this year, but those guys will handle it if I can't make it down.
And what happens at the Blesto meeting?
So it's the first look. You have the Blesto scouts representing each team. You know, there's one from each team, and they're representing a certain area like a team, and they will give everybody the first look of the guys in their area so that basically now – each area scout can start thinking in his head and start watching a little film over the summer to prepare their fall schedule. Where do I need to get to? Do I need to get to Ohio State, then Michigan, then here, and also include those small schools?
So you do have a lot of work to do, and we're going to let you go. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Brandon Bean is the new general manager of the Buffalo Bills. Coming up in a couple of minutes, Kevon Seymour will join us, the Bills cornerback. That's coming up next on the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Kevon Seymour is going to join us in a couple of minutes. Bill's second-year cornerback. Our thanks to Brandon Bean, the general manager, for joining us in studio. This is a tweeted-in question. And can we ask the GM what's the clear answer at the quarterback position? Is it an open competition, or is Tyrod the starter? That was yesterday's show. Look, we're not, you know, it's pretty obvious what's going on. Tyrod is the starter. He has to perform well today, tomorrow, through training camp, or else he won't be the starter. But do you have a better answer at quarterback? I don't. And I don't blame them. Brandon Bean said it yesterday. We played the soundbite yesterday, talked about it a little bit, for saying it's open competition. Nothing is set in stone. You know, if T.J. Yates goes lights out, then he'll be the starter, right?
Right.
Does anybody foresee that happening? Same for Cardale Jones. Same for Nathan Peterman. I don't see it happening. I think Tyrod's a starter. I think much ado has been made about kind of a basic comment by the GM yesterday.
Right.
Don't you?
It was a very basic comment. And it's something that if you're a new GM and you have a new head coach, you're going to say things like that. Like I said yesterday, you want to send a message through your entire locker room. This is what it's going to be now and moving forward. And if you can say that about your quarterback, oh, by the way, that has led this team to be a top 10 scoring offense, regardless of how good or bad you feel he is in the passing game, this is a top 10 scoring offense. So if you can come in and say that about the quarterback, then everybody's on guard, you know, and that's everybody around the building, just like we had when Petey was on the show. Everybody around the building, everybody's on guard right now because it's a whole new regime. So, look, I don't think that there's a really going to be a quarterback competition. They just want everybody in the locker room to feel like this is what it's going to be moving forward.
And they want them to compete, Tyron
right.
included.
They want them to compete. You know, don't just come in here and feel like, oh, it's yours. Yeah, we want you to compete. But we're not saying this is like he has to really just be horrible in camp for him to lose that job.
Yeah.
Like literally just horrible in camp.
And as I said yesterday, in my recent memory, I can't recall anyone who competed harder or more successfully for an open quarterback job than Tyrod Taylor 2 years ago. That was as close to a three-way, pretty much dead even in terms of reps, in terms of it was only 2 years ago, Donald.
Right.
They split those reps about as squarely as they could among the three, and Tyrod came out a clear winner. He knows how to compete. He can handle it. He can handle the competition.
He can handle
Don't worry
it.
About him. The national narrative that came out of Brandon Bean's comments yesterday that, oh, the Bills are still dysfunctional. The Bills don't know what they're doing at the quarterback position. It's not the case. They know that Tyrod's a starter. They know that they want all of them. I think there's, four or five on the roster now. They want all of them to compete, mm-hmm. you know, and nobody gets a free pass, which is the way it should be. There's five on the roster now. That's the way it should be.
If you can say that about your quarterback that has been to two straight Pro Bowls, then, yeah, I mean, we want you to compete. We want you to come in here and compete, all right, regardless of your contract, whatever. We want you to compete. And that sends a message to everybody else. Everybody has to come in here and compete. I don't care who you are, you know. So, look, Tyrod Taylor is not afraid of competition. And competition brings out the best in people. If he feels like, man, they really are saying, like, this is going to be an open competition. If he feels like it's truly an open competition, he'll come in and he'll compete and he'll win the job.
Strikes me, Donald, the players handled that better than some fans and many media members do. That kind of a comment yesterday. Players are like, yeah, of course, I'm going to compete. It's a
right.
competition. Media members are like, oh, the Bills are lost again at quarterback. Some of them, national guys mostly.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of stupid yesterday when I was reading, you know, what people were saying about it. We were watching ESPN Sports Center this morning, and it was a panel discussion, and it came up, Bills quarterback controversy, Bills quarterback competition, ? To his credit, Bill Polian, who knows a thing or two about, you know, how many of these organizations operate, shot it down. He said, look, Tyrod's a starter, but I don't blame him. You know, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean and all of them were saying, let's have competition for it. That's kind of the way you set it up.
The one thing that Tyrod has been since he came into this league and especially since he got here is a true pro. That he has been, regardless of what people say to him, regardless of what people in the media ask him, regardless of what is written about him.
How about getting benched in week 17?
Right.
He handled
regardless
that well.
Of what has happened to him being benched, making them take a pay cut, he has been a pro of all pros, right? So if you're a pro, a true pro in this league and in any profession or professional sport, you know that every year it's a competition, especially in football. You know, every single year it's a competition. If I come in here and I don't do my job, then somebody else is waiting to take my job, and somebody else is going to be cheaper than me. That's how this league works. They are always, every day, they are looking for somebody that can do what you can do that's cheaper. It's a competition every single year when you're in this league. So Tyrod Taylor knows that, and he's not afraid of competition.
A couple of other tweets based on Brandon Bean's appearance. Aunt Bee's Pickles tweeted in, could you ask Brandon Bean this? Are any of the former scouts being interviewed for positions? Thanks. I didn't see the tweet until now. I did not ask him that. I don't know. I don't know where they are with some of the former scouts. You know, they let 17 guys go a week and a half ago. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And by the way, you know, I think in that process, you kind of want to let him get through it before you start quizzing him. Are you going to interview this guy? Are you going to interview that guy? I mean, did any of us think he was going to interview Brian Gain for the player personnel job? No. I mean, that kind of came out of nowhere.
Right.
First time I heard of that over the weekend, I was like, wow, You know, good move.
Good move.
The guy who is, has been a candidate for, as Brandon pointed out, he's been a candidate for more, at least interviewed for more general managers' jobs than he has.
I mean, you have a guy that has interviewed for more jobs than you have. And then you call that guy and say, hey, you want to come over here to the Bills. It's not necessarily a promotion. It's a lateral move for him, but you can be a part of building something. And for him to be able to actually get him away from that organization, that is a great thing. You know, it's not easy to do, man. You have a guy that has interviewed so many times to be a GM. He wants to be a GM. And now you call him and say, we need you to move laterally to another organization. Do I really want to do that? They were able to do it. So kudos to them.
And you don't know what's at play there, what his exact situation was at Houston or how mm-hmm. he reads his situation in Houston. Quite frankly, we don't know what the financial compensation is. Maybe right. it's a better package here than he was getting in Houston. It's a slight change in title from director of player personnel to vice president of player personnel here. And I read, I guess, overnight that the Texans had to basically agree to let him go, even though it was kind of a marginal slight change in title. So whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, if a guy doesn't want to work for anywhere anymore, then you're probably better suited to say, yes, move along, go ahead. You don't want to be with us, go ahead, take that job. So I also – it's interesting background, Stu. Brian Gain, the Bills' new vice president of player personnel, with most of his experience on the pro scouting side with the Jets and the Dallas Cowboys. He is now the Bills' vice president of player personnel. And then you have Joe Shane, who has most of his experience, it would seem, on the college scouting side. And he is the assistant general manager, Joe Shane. And I don't – and getting the sense from Brandon Bean a minute ago that that's not what they're going to solely focus on, right? I don't think Brian Gain is going to spend his time, all of his time, on pro personnel. And Joe Shane, as assistant GM, is going to spend all of his time on college personnel. It sounds like they're going to kind of mix it up. They have a committee approach.
I think they,
you know, there's a lot of brain power there. Each guy with about, 18 to 20-some years in the league.
Yeah.
Each of them, including the GM.
Each of them. And I think they want – you know, they want to grow these guys as well, and they want them to go on and be BGM somewhere else, but they want to grow these guys just like, Dave Gettleman helped to grow him and make him a GM. You know, we want you to be able to do different things. If you've always done this, well, now we want to introduce you to this. You know, we want you to get good in this as well, because it will be better for our organization. If the more you can do, the better we are, you know. And so it just comes all the way back to that versatility thing. He said it. The same way we talk about the players, we want our players to be versatile. We want our players to be good men. We look for that in the staff as well. You know, we want them to be versatile, be good men, be, you know, family-oriented, things like that. So, you know, it really just comes all full circle.
Squeezing a call here from Dave in Rochester. Hello, Dave. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Great.
Thank you to you guys for what you do. I appreciate your information. I agree that the linebackers and the secondary are the biggest concern. I think the defense actually, defensive line, is going to be on the rebound. I think they will play better this year. I think on the offensive side of the ball, though, the biggest concern is I haven't heard anything about Eric Woods, his rehabilitation. You know, that guy's a leader, and he's the glue on the offensive line. You plug and play, and you get the receivers in there and stuff. But the mainstay was the running game. And I would like to know what's going on with Eric Woods.
Just a brief look at today's OTA, the first of 10, and it will be open to the media on Thursday, open to everybody on Thursday. But Eric Wood was out there, looked good to me. We had him on the show a couple, 2 weeks ago, I believe, and said he's – he's pretty much on schedule and getting around okay. I don't think it's a concern.
He said he was getting around okay. He said he did, you know, he wanted to get out here to the first practice and see how the leg reacts to actually, because he said he had been working out and it all felt good, but he hadn't leaned on people. He hadn't been doing any type of things like that, you know. So he wants to see how he feels after today's practice. And hopefully, you know, he goes back in the training room, and when he wakes up tomorrow, he's okay with everything, and he can keep on moving forward.
So far, so good for Eric Wood. All right, another guy a lot of people keeping an eye on is second-year cornerback Kevon Seymour. Gilmore is gone. Is Seymour the man? He's going to join us when we return. He's going to be live with us in studio. It is the John Murphy Show. We are presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Day one of OTAs for the Bills today, just off the field in the last hour or so. And joining us in studio, in our One Buffalo studio, getting set for his second season with the Buffalo Bills in the defensive backfield. Happy to have Kevon Seymour with us. Kevon, in a little more than a year, you have established yourself as one of the go-to guys for this show. We thank you for that. We love having you on.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Why is it? When are you going to sour on us like most of the other players?
I mean, I enjoy doing this, man.
Why do you like it?
I love
y'all
company.
How can I get some other guys?
He love our company.
Yeah, I love y'all company.
Good answer.
That is a good answer. You see something like this in your future when you're done playing?
Not necessarily. Yeah. I mean, I love talking, you know, working with people, but ultimately, you know, I want to work with kids and stuff and give back. Yeah. I see myself like as a sports counselor or advisor or something like that.
That's why I work with Donald. I like working with kids.
Shots fired, huh?
Yeah. It's all good.
Hey, what was it like? Day one, and I know you've been here for a couple of weeks through all the conditioning work and a couple of sessions with the mini camp a couple of weeks ago. But OTAs, it's just a little bit different than what you've done so far, right?
Yeah, definitely. This is different. Day one went well. We got the new guys out there, so we all rotating in and stuff like that, just helping each other out, just trying to get acclimated with the new defense.
When you're out there in OTAs like today and you finally get a chance to do 7-on-7, 11-on-11, it's got to feel a little bit different than just, you know, stretching and going through the workouts that you've done, right? It's got to feel like this is a little bit more like football, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would say that. I mean, it felt like, you know, we further in the season right now.
Yeah.
When really, you know, we just starting. We, you know, we've been having great attendance and stuff, so we all on the, you know, we all like a few steps ahead. Mm-hmm. So.
Always, I when I was playing and people taught me this, you know, they would always say it's a marathon, not a sprint. How do you really like take care of your body and pace yourself so that once you get to training camp, you're still amped up and ready to go, you know, because this was day one and the energy was high. It was crazy out there. Everybody's ready, you know, especially the rookies. They're ready to get out there and get it going and show what they can do. There's competition all over the field. But what happens a couple weeks from now, mini camp, and then how do you really just pace yourself so that you can last into training camp and into the season?
I mean, the energy was high. I mean, we told, you know, and as players and stuff, you know, we full go.
Mm-hmm.
We not, you know, we don't really know, like, pacing ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we going out there and just full go 100% every time, but we got that time, you know, coaches giving us, you know, that time and to take care of our bodies and stuff, to get in the ice tubs and to have meetings on our own and stuff to get things down. So, I mean, we got enough time to recover. So it's all about just going, you know, but at the same time, just getting together as teammates and stuff without the coaches to play fast, you know, to getting our stuff down.
A year ago, Kevon, you came in here as a sixth-round draft pick, you know, probably hoping that you'd make the roster. You did that and a lot more, a couple of starts and 15 games played last season. How is your approach different now than it was a year ago at this time?
So I wouldn't say I'm a vet, you know what I mean? I'm still technically
still
a rookie until I get through in preseason games. So right now, man, I'm just trying to help the young guys.
That's what it is now, the preseason games?
Yes, the
they told me
games.
Four games into the regular season, second year.
I feel like it's just the preseason game.
Oh, man.
Once that real game, you know, that game one come and it's out the way, I feel like I ain't going to be a rookie no more.
Okay. But you don't feel like a vet then? You still approach it?
I approach myself. Like right now, I feel like a vet, you know, but technically, you know, to the vets, you know, I'm still a rookie.
Yeah.
But in my eyes, I'm a vet. You know, I'm helping the young guys, you know, that's coming in, helping them get acclimated and stuff as much as I can. So,
Kevon Seymour joins us. A call here from Butch in Buffalo. Go ahead, Butch, you're on the air.
First of all, so thanks for taking my call, guys. I love all of you. I just want to just say I'm a very high advocate of Kevon Seymour. I think, you know, everybody talk about LSU, Ohio State, but I believe USC puts out good DBs as well. I watched him last year, and he got nicked up a little bit, but he's about to have like I told your producer, he's going to have one of the breakout years on his defense.
Let me relay that, Butch. Thanks very much. I'm sorry, Kevon, you couldn't hear Butch, but he said you're going to have a breakout year. He said USC produces the good DBs,
that.
Not just LSU, and that he thinks you're going to have a breakout year.
I appreciate that, and I believe that as well. You know, every day. You know, I put that in my head that I'm gonna have a great day. You know, I just start with a day. You know, then I follow on with a week, and then so, I mean, I'm preparing to have that great year and to be that corner. You know, Buffalo want me to be.
Do you believe that USC puts out the best DBs though? That's the question.
I believe that. We got a lot of great DBs that came out of USC. So, I mean, I'm going to live up to that standard.
Mm-hmm. Who's the best? Ronnie Lott?
Yeah, I like Ronnie.
He's like Ronnie, right? Ronnie. Up there. And you yeah. grew up out there. You, yeah. you know, yeah. you heard that all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he carries himself like he's the best.
He really do. I remember he came back one day to speak to us, and he can still move yeah. like the old Ronnie Lott. So it surprised me.
Hey, Kevon, you know, the Bills in the first round moved down but did draft a corner. What was your thoughts on that Thursday of draft weekend when 27th overall, they draft a corner from LSU, Tre'Davious yeah. White? What'd you think?
I mean, I remember watching him before, you know, not even knowing we was going to draft him. You know, it was a talk saying, you know, we're going to get a linebacker, you know, the linebacker from Alabama and stuff. And so when they drafted Trey, I just already had like a kind of I already had an idea of what type of player he was and, you know, what he can do for us, because I remember I was just sitting down during draft week and I seen him on, you know, on some type of talk show with a safety and stuff, and just watching his highlights and stuff and just seeing how, you know, how he can move and how you know, great of a corner he was and, you know, how good he going to be for us. So, I mean, he going to be real good for us. It's going to bring definitely competition to the room and stuff. We got a lot of great vets, too, that's up here with us now. So it's just going to make us all better. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to that.
Do you immediately view him as, like, a threat as soon as they draft him? Like, oh, this guy's coming after my job.
Nah, not like that. I mean, I just view it as, I wouldn't say a threat, but just, I mean, just an extra corner in the room.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, all the rest of the other guys. You know, I mean, I'm just doing my job and, you know, preparing like I always prepare and, you know, just letting things fall into place.
I always tell a story. The Bills signed on the day of training camp. We're traveling down to Rochester. They signed Brad Smith, a wide receiver. He came over from the Jets, right? And we had a full wide receiver room, and mm-hmm. they signed him and they paid him. So it was like, all right, you know he's going to be here. You know he's going to be a part of something.
Yeah.
And I remember I called Stevie. Driving down to Rochester, I called Stevie and was like, hey, man, you heard they just signed Brad? And I was like, I'm telling you, somebody going to be gone. It ain't going to be me, you know. But that was my thought process. Yeah. You know, I just went into camp. Let's go. It's time to go.
Exactly.
Now, when the GM comes out and the head coach and everything that they preach is competition, and then they come out and say, you know, even the quarterback room, there's a competition there, you know. What message does that send to everybody else in the locker room?
Man, like, that the best man go play,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's going to be real competitive. So just be ready to compete, you know what I mean? No matter who you are, you know, where you at on the depth chart, we all competing. So, I mean, you got, you know, small room for error, really, you know what I mean? Especially when you got a guy coming in like Trey, you know, just other guys that's you know, waiting to take your spot, mm-hmm. you know, and working to take your spot.
The one thing, even under a different coaching staff, Kevon, but you can point to 1 year of, you know, 15 games played, 3 starts. You've got a little resume that you're building up here, and that's got to mean something in this competition.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm not just an outside corner. I can play nickel as well, so wherever they need me, you know, I can play. So, I mean, I can play outside, and I can be great at it, and I can play inside and nickel, and I can be great at it. So, I mean, I'm very versatile and stuff, and I can move around, so. I feel like I got an edge on.
People always say, you know, you start 2 corners, but you really need 3 almost as starters.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you probably
definitely.
Play 4 when it's all said and done.
Definitely,
right?
Because anything can happen, you know. And then, like, you know, God forbid if somebody get hurt, you know, somebody go down, you know, the next man got to be up, and that guy got to be ready to go. So,
How much have you learned? You talked about there, you know, they signed some veterans as well. How much have you learned from those guys, especially about this system?
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot just starting with Leonard Johnson, you know, great person, you know, and a great nickel,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I learned a lot, you know, just different slang and different football talk and stuff like that. And then Sharice Wright, you know, he came from USC and stuff like that. I didn't play with him at USC because he's older than me. But just with him and stuff, we just been going over stuff like, you know, just the simple stuff. You know, when we see each other, we ask each other questions and stuff like that. So. And just watching him play, you know, watching him use his technique and stuff. So, just things like that.
Kevon Seymour in studio with us, Bills cornerback. Came across this a couple of weeks ago, Kevon. Pro Football Focus is an analytics website that looks at numbers and stats. And they looked at rookie corners in the National Football League last year. And they have a metric, most coverage snaps per reception allowed. Now, you only played in about, what, 25, 26% of defensive snaps last mm-hmm. year. So it wasn't as if you had a ton of snaps in those 15 mm-hmm. games. But you allowed one catch for essentially 14.8 or 15 coverage snaps when you drop it into coverage. Best among rookie corners in the National Football League. One catch for every 15 times you were dropping into coverage. You knew that stat, right? You came across
that
somewhere.
Yeah, I came across
that. What does that say to you?
I just basically made the most of my opportunities. You know, I didn't get as much of snaps as them other guys that's up there on the charts and stuff, but mm-hmm. I made the most of my opportunities and made sure, you know, when my number was called and it was my time to, you know, hop out there on that field,
yeah.
you know, I was going to make a play or, you know, do my job.
I mean, you know, you look at that list and you have Eli Apple, who was a first rounder last year. You have Ramsey, Jalen Ramsey from, you know, and those are
corners.
Two guys that, yeah, good corners in this league so far. And people talk about them a lot, you know, but for you to be the number one on that list, I mean, in your mind, it has to be like, that's what I'm talking about. You know, I'm out here, like you said, you're making the best of your opportunities regardless. It said like a minimum of 150 snaps. So, you know, you played that many snaps at least, and you did good when you were out there on the field. So that, like Murph said, you have a resume, and that helps out in this competition. But now it's just time to get to work and compete some more.
Definitely.
Kiva, I wonder, you know, it's going to be a different defense, obviously, with Coach McDermott. Last year, it was seemingly with, you know, Rex Ryan and Rob and Dennis Thurman, there was a lot of man coverage responsibilities. People think this defense will be more of a zone-based scheme, and maybe with your skill set, maybe this is a better – is this a better fit for you? You know, you're long, you're kind of taller than most, what, 5'11", almost 6 foot tall? Is
6 foot.
Yeah. Because they have you on paper as 5'11". You better get that straight.
Oh, yeah, that's wrong.
So you're really long, you're 6 foot tall. Is this a better defensive scheme for you, do you think?
Man, I can play either, you know, man, zone, you know, we're going to be playing more zone and stuff. But then at the same time, I mean, we're going to be playing some man this year. So really it's just all about being comfortable in the scheme. So once I get comfortable, you know, I'm going to be flying around and stuff, making a lot of plays.
What's the biggest difference in playing zone and playing man from, you know, aside from the obvious?
Yeah, really, I mean, you can have different responsibilities. As far as, you know, when you're playing zone, you can have your eyes – you're not really on your man. You're not locked on your man the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in zone, you can read the quarterback. You know, you can read the receiver. You know, and the ball. Yeah. You know, all at once, and then you can look at the line of scrimmage. So you can broaden your vision when you're playing man. Really, it's just you key the quarterback, your three step read. If you go do that, and then you locked on your man. So the possibility of, you know, the chance of making plays is slim.
Now, in a zone, and your eyes are on the quarterback or on, you know, a couple of different receivers that can come into your zone or even on the line, what's going on in there, can you find yourself getting lost? Because it's more of a feel type of thing, right?
You
like, you got to feel the guy around you.
You can find yourself getting lost if you don't got the right leverage. If you're in the wrong, you know, if you say you're supposed to be outside and you inside, you know, you can lose that receiver, mm-hmm. and it can be over for you. So you definitely got to have the right leverage and stuff like that.
So is that when, like, you know, somebody gets bombed, the cornerback looks up at the safety like,
oh,
hey,
yeah. yeah.
Yo, what you doing, man?
Try to blame it on the safety. Really, it's the corner.
Yeah. Most corners just turn around and look at the safety.
Yeah.
You don't, right? You don't really make a big deal out of it. Just look. Maybe hold
like,
your
yeah,
exactly.
You know,
but shoot your best better. Just go chase your receiver. And when you get back to the meeting room and when you watch a film, it's going to be on you.
Yeah, that's right.
You ain't got nobody to blame but yourself.
Right. Hey, what's the offseason been like for you, Kevon? What have you been doing back home in Southern California? What kind of cool stuff have you been up to?
Basically, man, I've just been doing just little stuff, just conditioning and just spending time with my daughter. You know, I got a daughter. She's 6 mm-hmm. months in my
yeah.
family. So just things like that. It was my first offseason and stuff, so I was just basically just trying to get back healthy, all the way healthy and stuff. It was a long, long, long year for me. So,
going back to the pre-draft and the draft and that setup? That year, or
the season itself, like, you know, just coming from college and then going to the league and playing all these games, including preseason and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, I adjusted well.
What about community stuff? Did you
I didn't do any. I didn't, you know, throw any camps. I didn't do anything like that. I went back to my high school. Just simple things like that. Mm-hmm. But nothing serious. I mean, I did some things up here, you know, since I've been back. But just small things. Like I went to the hospital and visit some kids and things like that. So,
any early impressions of Coach Bird, your defensive backfield coach here?
He's a technician. You know, very detailed. You know, a great person, you know, even better coach. So, I mean, he gonna have us right, you know, along with the other coaches in the room, Coach Bobby, you know, Coach Jimmy, the nickel coach, and, you know, along with Coach Frazier. So, you know, things gonna fall in place for us.
Hope so. Thank you for coming by. You are one of our favorite guests. We always appreciate when
you
come by.
You just saying that.
No, I don't say it to everybody. Do I don't?
No, he doesn't.
We have some guys, they don't even get out the door and I'm complaining.
Yeah, for real.
Keep on Seymour.
Thanks for
Bills cornerback joining us in studio. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive, where the Bills wrapped up day one of their organized team activity about an hour and a half ago. First of 10 OTA sessions over the next month or so. Bills players on the field, and for the first time, they can compete a little bit. No hitting, no pads, but they do play 11-on-11. They do go 7-on-7, 9-on-7. Next 4 weeks, they'll have 9 more of these sessions. Meantime, the front office coming together. Brian Gain hired as vice president of player personnel yesterday by the Buffalo Bills. He interviewed for the open GM position a week and a half ago, the position that was filled by Brandon Bean. Bean joined us last hour and told us he was very happy to have Brian Gain available, and he is now with the team as vice president of player personnel. Earlier in the week on Sunday, the Bills announced that Joe Shane joins the Bills as assistant general manager. Couple of tryout players from the past weekend here at One Bills Drive signed to the active roster, part of the 90-man roster now. They are linebackers Anthony Harrell and Abner Logan. Harrell is 6'2", 229 pounds, who graduated from Georgia Tech and then transferred to Florida to play his final collegiate season. He was a backup linebacker and special teamer. Abner Logan comes from the University of Albany, a transfer from Maryland. He came back after a knee injury that kept him out for the entire 2015 season. Both of them linebackers, both signed to the roster yesterday. Seahawks coach Pete Carroll says the team is considering Colin Kaepernick and RG3 as possible backup quarterbacks to Russell Wilson. Carroll said he's trying to find a quarterback who would fit the style Seattle desires in Wilson's backup. Stanley Cup playoff hockey tonight, Western Conference Finals Game 3. The Anaheim Ducks at Nashville. That's an 8 p.m. faceoff. That series tied at one win apiece. In the East, that series moves on now to Ottawa for Game 3 tomorrow night. The Penguins, with a 1-0 victory last night, tied up the series at one win apiece. And the Bisons home tonight against the Syracuse Chiefs at 6:05. Hall of Famer Tim Raines will toss out the ceremonial first pitch at Coca-Cola Field today. Tim Raines, pretty cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah, you know Tim Raines, right?
I know. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's throwing out the ceremonial pitch
today. And on Friday, Sean McDermott's going to throw out the first pitch.
Did Tim Raines play in Buffalo at one point?
Did he not coach here? I think he was on the coaching staff.
Oh, okay.
I should know that. I don't think he played here.
Oh, okay.
Came up in the Expos organization. But I think he was now you got to make me look. I think he was a coach here for a while. Gotcha. Tim Rock Raines.
Yeah, I'm like, I mean, that's – where's the connection there?
It's a good question, Donald. But it'll take me a minute to find the answer. Right. Thanks to Kevon Seymour for joining us. Thanks to you for joining us. Our Twitter poll today deals with the Bills roster. Which position group is the most important to the Bills' success in the upcoming season? We've had a lot of traction on this on Twitter. We'd like to hear from you on the phone. Number to call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can weigh in on our Twitter poll, which position group most important to the Bills' success in the upcoming season. So far, with more than 1,000 votes cast, 43% say defensive back, linebacker. 38%, not far behind, say wide receivers. 14% say defensive line. 5% say running backs. I think our Twitter poll is flawed today, Donald. Why did we lump DBs and linebackers together?
I'm not sure why we did that. Yeah, totally. Definitely totally different.
Why are quarterbacks?
If we were going to lump anybody together, it would have been defensive line and linebackers, right? What were we doing?
Who did this Twitter poll? Hey, the
I think it was our producers.
The push continues to improve headgear, helmets in the National Football League, and there's a new company out there with a highly engineered football helmet designed to reduce impact forces. It is the Visus helmet, right? I think that's how you pronounce it. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a professor of neurological surgery at University of Washington, co-founder and chief medical officer of the company, Dr. Samuel Broud, is on the line with us. Dr. Broud, thanks for joining us. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah, that's right. It's called Visus.
Visus.
The way we're pronouncing it. Yeah, change in Latin.
Oh, I took Latin for 4 years. I should know that.
Really?
Visus. It's the Visus 01 helmet. What's the concept here, Dr. Brown? What's it all about?
Well, you know, concussion's been one of the, you know, huge concerns for both youth participation and certainly all the way up to the NFL. And I've had the great honor of working in Seattle here running the concussion program. And several years ago, it just struck me that we were spending a lot of energy looking at sensors and diagnosing concussion. And, you know, if you really take a step back, the technology around equipment really hasn't changed very much in many, many years. And I started to look at the helmet, and it just seemed like an area where we could do something new and different. And literally sketched a couple ideas on a napkin. We have a really spectacular mechanical engineering department here, and called up the chair of mechanical engineering out of the blue, and I said, hey, you know, I'm worried about kids, and I've got an idea. Can we sit down and chat? And 4 years later, $30 million of investment, you're looking at the 01, which we're really excited about.
I saw a stat just today, as a matter of fact, Dr. Broud, about the concussion rate in the National Football League is higher than any other sport. I mean, sometimes it's the NFL's per-game concussion rate is about seven times the combined sum of the other non-football leagues. Are you familiar with those numbers, and what do you think of that? It sounds kind of high.
Yeah, I mean, football in general, just if you look at all the data, has a higher concussion rate than most of the other sports. Girls soccer, there's some other things that are relatively close. But, you know, football is certainly held out as an outlier. And, you know, the goal of what we're trying to do is really to see if we can bring the risk back toward the median. We're going to have to prove these things out over time, but we're optimistic that better technology can be at least part of the solution to what's going on in football and certainly other sports too.
All right, Doc. So, you know, when I watch the video on YouTube and really watch how this helmet works, it looks like, you know, the outside, the shell of the helmet is a little bit softer than traditionally. And then you have the technology more on the inside of it. So can you kind of break down how it works?
Yeah, of course. So this is a very highly engineered product, and what we tried to do is really start from scratch and understand sort of the forces that we think from the medical literature lead to concussion, not just linear impact, but we believe that rotational forces, sort of these tangential hits or where the head is turning, have a higher risk of getting a concussion. So the way the helmet is designed, there's four layers to it. There's an outer shell that feels hard but is paintable. The layer underneath, we call the reflex layer, has these columns, and the columns are able to deform and compress when the force is applied to them. Under that, we have a hard shell. So current helmets were designed many, many years ago to reduce the risk of catastrophic injuries. So these are skull fractures or intracranial hemorrhage. They do a great job at that, but they were never designed really to address forces that we think are more likely to lead to concussion. So we have a third layer that's a hard shell. That's to prevent those other type of injuries. And then a foam layer inside that custom fits the helmet to the player. So four layers that work together in a very unique way to reduce the force distribution.
On the line with Dr. Samuel Broud of the University of Washington Neurological Department. He is also the co-founder of the Visus 01 helmet. Dr. Broud, I work on the Bills broadcast with Mark Kelso, played safety here for the Bills for many years.
Sure,
and
sure.
Has been involved in a lot of helmet designs and prototypes over the years. We talk about it a lot, and he told me once, you know, he looked at softer shell helmets, and I think his product is still, you know, in developmental stage, but he thought with soft shell helmets, sometimes there's a greater chance of more contact, you know, helmet to helmet. In other words, you wouldn't get that sort of a quick glancing blow off a hard shell helmet, but softer helmet might stick a little more, and maybe they were doing tests into whether that might be even more dangerous or increase the risk of a concussion that way.
Yeah, no, we've looked into that as well, too. And, you know, there's this concern that had been raised in the past about softer shells sticking or engaging more. And
yeah.
The materials that we use in this particular helmet have been tested toward that issue, and we don't see sticking or coupling as the helmets engage. So it's an important issue, but something that's engineered with this particular helmet to not be an issue.
And can you, I know you talked to it briefly a minute ago, but the guts of the helmet, the inside of the helmet, what's different about your 01 helmet than maybe some of the prototypes we've seen out there before?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, again, as we had a chance to start from scratch, we were able to look at various head sizes of individuals and found that we were able to actually cluster them into various shell sizes. And then from that, we're able to take more of a custom approach in terms of the liner. So when you look at a standard helmet these days, the way they fit it to the individuals with air bladders, or they'll shim the foam to get it to fit. And so you'll see, you know, all the guys at the sideline, they'll have this big mark on their forehead because what they're doing is they're inflating that helmet very, very much. They make it as tight as possible so it can fit. So we thought there was a nice opportunity also to try and change the way helmets are sized and the way they're fit to the individual, because we certainly think it's very important to have a properly fitting helmet to get the performance benefit. So we spent really quite a bit of time and energy just on that piece alone, which has not been done for whatever reason to date.
Hey, Doc, when you, and I understand the technology side of it and how it works on that side, but just from a mental side of things on the player's thought process, do you think that if a player knows that this is a softer shell helmet, that he might not just go diving in there and use his head as a torpedo, as a weapon?
Yeah, you know, I get that question a lot, too. And, you know, I tend to think about it like this. Certainly any, you know, equipment that's going to be more protective may make some athletes think that they can do things that they shouldn't otherwise do. And this is really where the rules of the sport start to come into play. There's been a lot of activity in the last few years in terms of rules in football and sort of how the players are supposed to engage that hopefully mitigate that. And so I think what we're doing is a piece of the puzzle, but the rules and good coaching, especially for kids, comes into play here, so that those type of things where the kids, you know, if they're spear tackling or doing things like that, that stuff still needs to be taken out of the game. We're a partial answer, we hope, to, you know, the safety issue, but rules remain an important piece of this as well.
Yeah. In fact, the NFL will tell you that they've had some success in changing the way, you know, players hit, not leading with their head, et cetera, changing the aiming point. Helmet-to-helmet hits are only part of the equation, though, aren't they, Dr. Brown? I mean, I've read some things that said it's really, you know, heads hitting the turf or hitting the ground that cause more concussions than helmet-to-helmet hits. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and there's a couple different ways certainly that they can happen. Head, you know, player to player, head to head contact, head to ground. There's also whiplash type injuries where you take a helmet to the body. Where we think we can be effective is certainly helmet to helmet, helmet to body, helmet to ground. Areas where the head is going to be impacting a surface against the helmet, we think that we can demonstrate a significant benefit there. Where a player takes a hit and sort of has more of a whiplash injury that doesn't involve the helmet, probably less likely to see a benefit in that situation.
Now, I know you guys study the NFL side of things, and I'm sure you study on the youth side. So on the youth side, all the way down to Pop Warner, Little League, you know, what are the numbers in terms of concussions? Because, I mean, my brother played, you know, Pop Warner at maybe 10, and I remember seeing concussions, seeing those children get concussions out there. So what are the numbers down on that level?
Yeah, so the numbers on the youth level are similar in a lot of ways. So we still see that youth football has one of the highest concussion rates. It's pretty close, as I was mentioning earlier, to girls' soccer. The way girls play, we think that there's a higher likelihood potentially of girls getting concussions than boys for a variety of different reasons. But football remains sort of this outlier, if you will, in terms of overall incidents. I think there's a lot of things that are going on to help reduce that risk of playing. We, you know, certainly believe kids should be out and active in participating in sports, but the goal for football and for all of these other sports where we know that there's, you know, certainly a higher than we'd like incidence of concussion is to bring about better rules, better equipment, other things, better coaching that will hopefully reduce those risks. So it's definitely an issue, and it's something that I think people are very actively trying to address because we all love the game. We want to see kids be able to participate and play, you know, football and other sports safely. And I think the worst thing kids can do is just sit inside and do nothing and play video games. We want kids outside and healthy. And, you know, what we're trying to do is to really improve sports safety equipment with the goal of reducing the risk of playing football and ultimately other sports.
On the line with Dr. Samuel Browdy is a co-founder of the Vices 01 helmet, which I think you point out in some of the material I read, Dr. Brown, that at least now the helmet, the 01 helmet, is not made for youth football, right? It's for upper level, higher level players. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So we've sort of taken the model. If you think about Formula One, the way they do things, they'll go and they'll go sort of to the elite levels, and then ultimately that technology will kind of trickle down. What we've done is gone into the NFL and Division One NCAA teams with the first pass on the helmet. And it's very important to me that the helmet ends up in the hands of kids around the country. That was the reason the project got started in the first place. So I think we're going to, A, learn a lot, and B, be able to continue to refine the helmet and bring the price point down so that it's accessible to kids within probably the next year or two is our goal. And the first helmet that we're putting out, too, will be available to high school athletes, but we're going to have a weight limit. We want to have it on kids who are bigger stature, bigger, higher weight. But for little kids who are playing, it's going to be out in the next couple years.
And what about the NFL? Do you have it in the hands of NFL teams, NFL players right now?
Yeah, we've had a great response. Pretty much every NFL team is taking helmets to trial. They're going to be used in OTAs. The NFL, as you guys know, the players can pick what helmet they want to wear. So the teams are going to provide the helmet as an option for individual players, and we're certainly expecting that there'll be quite a few NFL players wearing the helmet this coming season.
Doc, I know in the NFL and probably all the way down to the youth leagues, the look of the helmet itself is a reason why a player might stay away from a helmet. So is that something you thought about when putting together this helmet? Because, you know, I remember I was like, man, that thing looks like a space shuttle helmet. Like, I don't want to wear that, you know. So is that something you thought about?
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting thing. So as we started the project out, you know, as a neurosurgeon and with Dr. Reinhall as the engineer, we were thinking, okay, we're going to make the best piece of equipment we can make. And we got educated very quickly along the way that, you know, you're talking about 18-year-old kids or teenagers and, you know, early 20-year-old kids. They care more about their appearance a lot of times than they do about their safety, unfortunately.
Right.
And so we ended up working with a great design firm out in Seattle called Artifact, and went and talked to all these kids, various players, NFL, college players, high school players, got their opinion of what they would want, and sort of that customer feedback, if you will, was one of the things that really ultimately led to the design of the helmet. So we wanted a helmet that was going to be the safest thing that's out there, but also something that players would look at and want to be wearing. They would find it cool and fierce and something that they would want to, you know, come onto the field with. So we spent a lot of time around that issue. If you made a helmet that's three times as big, and, you know, I saw a picture of, you mentioned Mark Kelso, he had a helmet where he had this outer layer on it, and it was really quite large and stood out as looking very different than the other helmets on the field. And we've come to find that players don't want that. They want a helmet that looks like a helmet. I think our helmet looks cool and modern, but it still looks like a football helmet.
And Dr. Brown and Donald can speak to this. Players probably want a helmet that does not restrict their field of vision too, right? Hello? Dr. Brown, are you still there?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that we found during the development was we had an opportunity to actually improve the visual field that one sees while wearing the helmet. So we have a broader field of view with our helmet than anybody out on the market today. And if you think about the math and the physics of that, that may allow a player to pick up somebody a couple seconds or a second earlier than they might otherwise, which could potentially give you a very big competitive advantage. And so this is another thing that we're excited about. It wasn't the principal thing at the start of what we were doing, but along the way we realized we could bring this additional feature in that we think actually provides not just a performance benefit, but a safety benefit. If you can see somebody coming in from your side that much earlier, you're going to be prepared for that particular play. And so a lot of just interesting things have come out of this that we think are going to be, you know, really beneficial.
I know from talking to Mark Kelso about helmets for years, Dr. Brown, one of the main issues about marketing these is, quite frankly, liability. I mean, no one's going to sue Under Armour if their T-shirt rips, but if your helmet doesn't work, you have a problem, and you're exposed to some pretty serious legal issues, aren't you?
Yeah, with any sporting goods company or any sporting product, there's certainly product liability around it. And we've been very cautious about how we're speaking to what we're doing. And while as a neurosurgeon, the impetus for the project is to reduce the risk of concussion, this is something we're going to have to prove out over time with our helmet. No helmet is going to eliminate the risk of concussion. There will be hits in our helmet that lead to a concussion. There's no doubt about that. But over time, what we have assumed and hope to prove to be true is that reducing the force will ultimately lead to a reduction in the concussion rate. But this is something that, as a medical scientist, I want to see us prove out over time. And so this is one of the things that we'll be doing as we go down the road is working on these studies to compare our helmet versus current helmets that are out there. But that work is to be done. We've been very fortunate on all of the bench testing to show very significant force reduction. And as you all know, the NFL just published this past week their ranking of helmets, and we were ranked the number one helmet in terms of bench testing that the NFL did. So we were very encouraged by that. I think that reducing the force is going to be beneficial, but these are all things that need to be proven out in time.
Dr. Brown, anyone listening today, parents, coaches, looking for more information, they can go to your website, I would assume, to find out more about the helmet?
Yeah, that would be great. The website is www.vicis.co.
Thanks, Dr. Brown, for being with us here today. Congratulations on this. Good luck with this. This sounds like a good development.
I appreciate it, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on today.
Dr. Samuel Brown, he is Associate Professor of Neurological Surgery at University of Washington and the co-founder of Vicis. And as he said, his website is vicis.co, talking about the Vicis 01 helmet, an engineered football helmet designed to reduce impact forces, a three-year effort, research and development, $20 million effort. And he said they've got it in the hands of some NFL teams this spring. And it can't hurt, right, Donald?
Yeah.
I mean, I do think everybody focuses on helmet technology when they talk about reducing concussions, but there are other and maybe even more important issues at play, including technique and tackling and hitting and many other things.
I think technology in the turf as well
is
something that people need to watch, because in my first concussion in this league, we played against the Patriots, and it was here on the field before they built the field that they have now in the stadium.
Yeah.
And I remember the field was frozen. It was frozen. And I went down and I hit my head, boom. And I got up and I had a concussion, you know. And then after that, they changed the field. They built a new field with, like, you know, heated whatever underneath the turf.
Put the rubber field.
Right, exactly. So, you know, the ground is something that people need to pay attention to. You know, for me, honestly, football is such a vicious sport. I don't know if you can ever eliminate concussions. And I've always said this. I don't know if you can eliminate concussions until you just take the face mask off. Take the face mask off and guys won't use their helmets as – they won't go diving in there to make tackles because they know their face is exposed, you know. And so I hope that something like this can really show the numbers that they are really starting to eliminate concussions. And every year the league comes out and they say, you know, the numbers are proving that there are less and less concussions in the game. But, you know, you keep seeing them. You keep seeing them all the way down to the youth level. And so you have parents that are taking their kids out of the game because of that, you know. And it's companies like this that can come in, develop something new that can, you know, keep that love and keep the kids in the game and keep that passion going in terms of football.
Your son is what, 6'5"?
My son is 6.
Would you let him play football, and at what age?
My son will not play football until he's in high school.
Why?
You know, because I played the game, I know how tough it is on your body. I played it since I was 7 years old, and I know what it was like to take hits then and hit other people. And also, just going to watch my little brothers play and seeing these kids get concussions at 10, 11 years old when their brain is really still developing, it's not a good thing, you know. Yeah. So my son is a natural born athlete and great. He's very, very good at football. But, you know, we've talked about putting him in a flag league, and he can do that all the way up until middle school area, high school, and then he can play tackle. But you know, I just don't want him to get hit on right now.
Thanks to Dr. Samuel Broud of Vices, the Vices 01 helmet. Dr. Broud joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. We've been talking a lot today about the Buffalo roster on this day one of the OTAs, organized team activity. And we took a look at our Twitter poll earlier on. What position group do you think is most critical for the Bills' success this year? You can weigh in on Twitter in the remaining 35 minutes or so. Or you can give us a call at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Manny from Hamburg's been waiting a while. Manny, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Thanks. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Sure.
I want to be the devil's advocate, John, and I'm going to go with the 5% running backs, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
We averaged 25 points a game last year, and we were a top 10 offense. We lost, as I mentioned in a previous call, we lost Gillislee, who was responsible for 4 points a game. So we are no longer in the top 10 offense anymore, having lost 9 touchdowns from the running backs. So now, whether the other wide receivers can pick up the difference, I don't know. But it seems to me that the running backs have to improve to keep up with what we did last year.
So are you saying, Manny, and this is a loaded, not a fair question, are you saying that Mike Gillislee is the difference between success or failure for the 2017 Bills?
It could be. It's 9 touchdowns. You know, he has 9 times 7, 60. He was responsible for 63 points. That takes us out of the top 10, which we were, you know, kind of proud of. So I would say it's a very big deal. Now, the other running backs may have to pick up the 9 touchdowns, or maybe the tight end will pick up 4, and the new wide receiver will pick up 5. I don't know how that will work out, but we are losing 9 touchdowns for the running backs. And I'm hoping that they're going to improve and we'll pick up those 9 touchdowns.
I guess I assume, you know, Jonathan Williams, Joe Banyard, one of those guys will pick up the
one
slack
of those guys
along
has
with
to.
Maybe Charles Clay and Sammy Watkins of healthy season.
I mean,
who
listen,
knows where the touchdowns
you,
come
you
from.
You want everybody, yeah, who knows where they're going to come from. Look, you need Shady on the field. He is your premier running back. Let's not forget that you do have, you know, fullbacks and a fullback slash running back that are very versatile, you know, and these are going to be guys that – they're going to use in short yardage. They're going to move around a lot, and they're going to catch the ball out of the backfield. So I think they're going to pick up the slack. We had a fullback last year in Jerome Felton who was good. He was a good fullback, and he led the way and opened a lot of holes, but you weren't going to throw him the ball out of the backfield, you know. So now you have a different dynamic to the offense. You're still going to run the ball, but now you have guys that can do different things in that backfield that can pick up the slack for Mike Gillislee. Mike Gillislee wasn't even a running back that was catching the ball out of the backfield like that, you know. So I think I think they will be okay. Now you do need to find that second running back. Who's going to be the second running back? You need to figure that out, and we'll see throughout camp who's going to step up and take that over.
If you just joined us earlier on the show, last hour on the show, we had the general manager Brandon Bean in studio with us. We had Kevon Seymour in studio with us as well. You can pick those up on our website at buffalobills.com. We still have to get through some fake news, real news, and we'll do that when we return. John Murphy and Donald Jones back with more on the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back live at One Bills Drive, day one of the OTAs. Donald and I will talk more about that in a couple of minutes, but want to let you know about a new initiative for the Bills, the Sabres, and Pagula Sports and Entertainment. Trying to help out units, the calling on Western New York's business community to take action to help with blood donations. It's the One Buffalo Challenge for Life. And joining us in studio, Unit's Director of Marketing and Development, Sarah Dina. Sarah, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Explain this to us, the One Buffalo Challenge for Life. What's it all about?
We're so excited that this summer we're working with PSE, the Bills, and the Sabres on a new initiative to try to raise blood donations and donor registrations throughout the summer. There is a constant need for blood. 100 people in Western New York need blood every day. We have close to 1,000 people waiting for an organ transplant right now. So it's important that we get the community as involved as possible in increasing these donations.
And we were talking on off air right before we came on about the summertime and how the need really increases in the summer.
It is. The summer is really tough for us. You know, with schools being out of session, people going on vacations, you know, engaging in sports and stuff, it's tough to get people to come in and donate. It's not top of mind donating blood or signing up on the registry. So we try to just come up with any sort of program initiative that we can to encourage people to come in and make sure that they realize that there is a need. Summer is a time when people are out being active, and unfortunately there are more accidents. So the need for blood within the hospitals increases in the summer. So again, making sure we have the donations available for our community hospitals in West New York is vital.
So the One Buffalo Challenge for Life is an effort to get big groups, get donors en masse, and by doing that, by engaging corporations.
Yes, definitely. It's great if we can find corporations, businesses, small businesses to hold blood drives because we have that built-in audience there. I think a lot of companies are looking to get more involved in the community to give back, and this is a great way to do it. We can go in, we can host a blood drive, a registry drive. We have some really great, amazing prizes that PSE has donated. And again, you're saving lives. It's so easy to do, and it can really help local patients and local hospitals.
So this would work. A company would say, let's do this. They would call units, and you would basically take care of all the logistics.
Yeah, we do. It's really an easy lift for the companies. We don't want them to have a lot to do. So we basically give them a toolkit. We'll give them marketing materials, posters, emails. We help them make appointments. We help them, you know, really get their company behind this, signed on and excited. And it's a fun event the day of. People feel so good after giving blood, after signing up on the donor registry. And we make sure that they know that they really are impacting local lives, and it makes all the difference in the world.
The One Buffalo Challenge for Life, in essence, becomes a competition, I guess, for some of these prizes.
Oh, absolutely. We have 4 different prizes we're giving away. We're giving 1 away for the largest blood drive, the largest registry drive, and 2 for the most engaged companies. So those who really, you know, get behind it, get creative, and show a lot of company spirit. So hopefully we get a lot of people signed on and this competition gets real and we can start doing this year after year.
A real competition. What's the feedback been from the corporation?
It was just announced today, but I know we already have a handful of people signed on. I believe National Grid, Merchants Mutual Insurance. So some really big companies are already showing interest, and I anticipate that there'll be a lot more.
And there are talk about the prizes that are available. I mean, some pretty serious
spiffs for some. We have some great prizes. We're giving away tons of tickets to preseason Bills and Sabres games, tours of both the stadium and KeyBank Center, a skate at KeyBank Center. I mean, really, really cool, once-in-a-lifetime experiences you're not going to get anywhere else.
It's blood drive, and it's also a
donor registry drive.
What's that mean?
That means that you sign up and share your intention to be an organ, eye, and tissue donor, which is so important. There are over 118,000 people waiting right now across the country, close to 1,000 right here in Western New York. So it's something we always encourage people to do.
And this is something that would go on the license that says that you are an organ donor?
Yes, you'd be on the New York State Donate Life Registry as consenting to be a donor.
I read where this is part of a whole unit's initiative to kind of engage with companies, not just individuals walking off the street, but get entire companies.
Yes, the One Buffalo Challenge is actually going to be the kickoff to an annual program called the Workplace for Life program. And again, it's a way to get our companies, our community involved in the mission for the entire year. We don't want them to just hold one blood drive or one registry drive. We want them to be involved in all aspects of our very important mission and giving back to the community. And hopefully this is a good way to start that.
Units has been involved with the Bills and the Sabres and PSE for a while now. I know there's always blood drives right over here in the stadium, right?
Yeah, we've actually been involved with, we started with the Sabres in 2007, so we're going on on 10 years now, and we've probably collected over 1,000 units of blood in our years together, which is really amazing, and I just anticipate that it's going to grow from here.
When does the One Buffalo Challenge for Life begin, Sarah?
It starts on June 26th. We're hoping to have all companies signed on by June 1st. If you're interested in joining the challenge, you can visit our website at units.org, that's UNYTS.org, or call our headquarters, 566-3925. Again, really easy to sign on. It's a really easy lift this summer, and it's a great way to give back to the community.
Any big companies, small companies too?
Big companies, small companies. We want anyone involved who wants to be involved.
Okay, sounds great. Sarah, thank you very much for
doing this.
Thanks
so much for having me.
Units.org is the website, right,
yes,
to go for more information on the One Buffalo Challenge for Life. Units, Upstate New York Transplant Services, trying to collect blood and donor registry and doing it in the workplace. The One Buffalo Challenge for Life starts a month away. And as Sarah said, you can get more information at units.org. Donald and I continue. We're here until 3 o'clock today. Our Twitter poll deals with the Buffalo Bills and the roster where it stands right now. We want to hear from you. What's the most critical position group for the Bills in 2017? What do they really need to get right this year? Give us a call on that, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter, and the Twitter poll, you see the results. 43% say defensive backs, linebackers are most critical. 38% say the wide receiving group. 14% say defensive line. 5% say running backs. You may agree or disagree with that. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, and we'll talk about that in the remaining few minutes of the show. In the meantime, Donald, it's that time of the show where we say fake news or real news.
Okay.
Our chance to you know, poke a hole in some of the narratives out there, right? It's
right.
Our chance
That's
to
exactly
set people straight, set the record straight.
Let's do this.
You look forward to this?
I do.
ESPN. They've got the Monday Night Football doubleheader on the opening weekend of the season on September 11th. The doubleheader. They've been doing it for years. And the second game, the Chargers and the Broncos, Los Angeles Chargers and Denver Broncos in Mile High Stadium, Monday, September 11th, 10:15 p.m. is part of their season opening Monday Night Football doubleheader. The Saints and Minnesota play earlier in the night. They've got their number one crew, ESPN does, Sean McDonough, John Gruden, in the broadcast booth. The second game. That night, Monday Night Football, the second game on the first Monday of the year, will be Beth Mowins, who makes news because she, of course, is going to be the first female ever to broadcast. I'm going to sneeze in a second, Donald. Ever for a national broadcast. The color analyst on that game is our very own Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan, the former Bills and Jets head coach, signed on with ESPN as a guest analyst. Fake news, real news. Rex Ryan is going to be a hit on Monday Night Football, September 11th. Hmm. I'm going to say fake.
Okay.
With this caveat, Rex is going to be good on TV eventually. I caught his first appearance on ESPN last Super Bowl Sunday, and he seemed nervous. He seemed a little bit ill at ease. I think doing a game broadcast is going to be totally new for him. He's never done that before. I mean, how'd you like to have your first real national broadcast be Monday Night Football, pretty big stage. So I think he'll probably catch flack. He'll probably make a mistake. He'll be roasted on social media. That's what social media does. He'll have all those reporters who he's somehow offended over the years taking shots at him. He'll be out there on Monday Night Football on September 11th. Will he be a hit on that Monday Night Football? No. But I think the more he does, the better he'll be. He certainly is as funny and glib and you know, light on his feet as any broadcaster out there, including most of us doing it for a living. So will he be a hit right away on Monday Night Football? Fake. But eventually, I think he'll be pretty good. Donald, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that first one, I'm going to go fake on this as well. I think that first one, that's a lot, you know, to ask of someone just coming into it. For your first appearance on Monday Night Football to be opening week Monday Night Football, that's a tough thing for anyone to do. I don't care about your personality. Like you said, you saw him Super Bowl week, and he did seem a little bit nervous, you know, and it's because, you know, you've been coaching football for so long, and now it's different because you know you have millions of people watching you, you know, and you start thinking, like, I don't want to trip up over my words. You might go too fast, different things like that. And so I think eventually he'll get good because his personality is perfect for it. But and he's smart. He knows football. He's a football coach, you know. So I think eventually he'll be good, but not on that first one.
Fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. How about this one? Yesterday on our show, Peter King, Sports Illustrated, Peter King, mmqb.si.com, He talked about Mount Patriots, right, yeah, standing in the way of the Bills and the Dolphins and the Jets. And I think I asked him a question, how much longer, you know, do we have to look at Mount Patriots and be frustrated by Brady and the Patriots? And I asked him, you know, how much longer can we expect Tom Brady to play? And here's what Peter King had to say yesterday on our show.
Brady's going to keep playing. If he gets whacked by Belichick at the end of this year, Tom Brady is going to keep playing. He's not leaving the game until he wants to. And he absolutely, unequivocally, unless something weird happens this year, will not want to leave.
Well, that's not music to the ears. Well, maybe it is if he gets whacked by Belichick. But the question is, fake news, real news, Tom Brady will play for another team in the NFL someday? Peter King said yes, if he gets whacked by the Patriots. Fake or real? I'm going to say fake. I think Brady is aware of his legacy and doesn't – I mean, Peyton Manning did it and won a Super Bowl, so there's that. I just don't think that'll happen. I think Brady is a product of Belichick in New England. I'm sure he's extremely proud of what he's accomplished there. Arguably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, quarterback in the game. I don't think he'll play for another team, but maybe I'm wrong.
I'm going to go real on this one. I think that, you know, Brady is very, very close with the owner, Kraft. You know, now I've watched an interview where this weekend where Bob Kraft on Bloomberg, I believe it was, said, you know, he's like another son to him. So, you know, it would be tough for the owner to have to let him go. But I think that Bill Belichick and the best interest of that team would let him go. And I think that, you know, we talked to Peter King about it yesterday, and he said he has that fire. He wants to play as long as his body will allow him to play. If they were to decide to, we're going to go with Garoppolo and let him go, I think he would go to another team and make it his business to beat the Patriots and win another Super Bowl somewhere else.
What has to happen for Belichick to say, we're going to go in a different direction here?
If there's any slight drop-off in Brady's play.
Any slight drop-off?
In Brady's
really?
Play. Yeah, I think
so. A slight drop-off and he's not as good as Garoppolo? Come on.
You know, you're definitely right. I think there comes a point, though, where they want to get Garoppolo in the game and start getting him some action, you know, getting him some real action so that when Brady does retire or whatever happens, there's not a huge drop-off. So I think at some point, you know, they want Garoppolo to get in here and start playing.
Oh, man, I look forward to that. Going to go with Jimmy, quarterback.
Right.
It's on to Cincinnati.
Right, I'm sorry to say this to you.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jimmy. Yeah. All right, fake news, real news, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. The Bills, with their first day of 10 OTAs today, they'll do it again tomorrow. Donald and I got a little peek of what was going on out there, and then kind of an encouraging peek at Reggie Ragland, who apparently has been cleared to return. Now, Sean McDermott will address this, I'm sure, if he's asked, on Thursday, Ragland's status. But this past weekend, Reggie Ragland tweeted out that he's been cleared to return to football. Cleared, he said, via Twitter. Thank you, Lord. Reggie Ragland, who was out there today. We don't know the extent of how much work he got, how involved he was in the Buffalo defense, but clearly it appears to be a step forward this week for linebacker Reggie Ragland, Donald.
Yeah, I think it's a huge step forward for him. You know, when you come in as a higher draft pick, and anybody, regardless if you're high, if you're a lower draft pick, undrafted, anytime you're on a team and you can't perform for that team, it's just hard. You know, you can't be out there playing. It is a tough thing to do, you know. So for him, I'm sure he's happy that he's cleared, and he's like, yes, that's what I've been waiting on. Now I can get out there and play. Even if it's just, you know, just running around on the field. Like, I might not be able to actually practice full go, but if I can just get out there on the field with these guys, I feel that much better.
It's been since August, August 5th, since Reggie Ragland was on the field, 9 months since he's been on the field. He was out there today, and we'll find out more Thursday, just as far as the extent of his involvement and what they're doing on defense. All right, back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider, the Buffalo Bills. We had Brandon Bean on the show earlier today, the new general manager of the Buffalo Bills, and he talked about his two hires since Friday. Joe Shane is the assistant general manager, and Brian Gain as the Bills' new vice president of player personnel.
that was part of the attraction of these two guys. I told them, I want you two guys to come in here and help me grow this thing, develop younger guys, and, you know, let's teach everybody and watch them grow. If, you know, one day I truly believe Brian and Joe will both be GMs in this league and get their opportunity to show what they can do.
Brandon Bean, general manager of the Bills. We also had Kevon Seymour on set, Bills' second-year cornerback, talked about his outlook, his mindset going into a second season in the National Football League.
Now, I approach myself, like, right now, I feel like a vet, you know, but technically, you know, to the vets, you know, I'm still a rookie. Yeah. But in my eyes, I'm a vet. You know, I'm helping the young guys, you know, that's coming in, helping them get acclimated and stuff as much as I can, so.
Donald, I'm confused because you said 4 games into your second year is when you consider yourself no longer a rookie. Kevon initially said he was kind of felt like a rookie, and but then on the answer he said, I consider – what is it?
When do you become a vet? When you're a vet, you look at the rookies and you say, this is what they told me. They said, because I would always mess with the guys, you know, when you get taped with the trainers, the veterans get like first dibs. You know, they get to go first. So I would come in and I'm like, yo, I'm on the table. Like I would rush in there and try to get on the table. Somebody would come in and kick me off the table. Even in my second year, they would come in and kick me off the table. And they're like, you're still a rookie. And I'm like, well, how long am I a rookie? And they're like, well, four games into your second season, you're not a rookie anymore. You know, and
you fell for it.
Hey, it just was it was what it was. But then my next year, I did that to the rookies in that year. And so I would think that, you know, Kevon is doing the same thing to those guys.
Maybe they just didn't like you the best. Did you ever think?
You know, they loved me, man. I was able to play around with those guys. Yeah. You know, I wasn't shy or anything like that. I was cool.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online, NapaOnline.com. Ryan Gates is our board op at Intercom. Production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blast, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan, Jay Harris, the producer. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.